This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you sell everywhere, from their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system. Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. What I love about Shopify is how no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/westwoodone, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/westwoodone now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/westwoodone.
What is happening, everybody? Welcome back to another Tour Life. We're here in just outside of Boston, Massachusetts. Yuli is in the house, and we're going to get the show on the road here. A couple things at the top, but Yuli, how's it going, man?
It's good.
How are you feeling?
It's good.
I feel good. Glad
it's always nice to be back in, like,
yeah,
together talking. Again, the camera situation is not ideal. We're figuring it out, but hopefully audio is good.
Yeah.
So people listening, that's all we care about. A couple things off the top. We are going to actually have Gooseman and Ezra joining the show at some point. We'll get their thoughts on some of the topics potentially that we have on the schedule, and then also talk about how they're feeling going into the MVP Open. Both are pretty much locked in for the Tour Championship. Yeah. You're on the bubble. I'm pretty much, I have to win to get in. But we'll hear how they're feeling, how their season's going, all that moving forward. Is the video really bad right now for you guys? Because it looks terrible on my end. Oh boy, Silas, how are we looking video wise here? Hopefully, it's not super blurry. I don't know what's going on. It shouldn't. I don't know why it's processing through as low as it is. It's 240p. Not good. What's going on? Maybe everyone needs to get off the Wi-Fi. Potentially. All right, 1 second. Pause.
Yeah, we might need everyone off the Wi-Fi. I need everyone off the Wi-Fi for a second.
I'm off the Wi-Fi.
Ezra.
It looks like
seriously?
It looks like we're recording on a potato right now, so apologies for that. I don't know what's going on. It's crazy because we literally checked the internet here, and it's really good internet. So I'm not really quite sure.
But we do here on the pod.
The audio is all that matters. So hopefully we have good audio. First things first, if you guys came to listen to the Matty O interview, bad news. Matty will not be joining the podcast, unfortunately. I was really looking forward to talking to him. But he said he couldn't do it. So we were excited. Now I'm bummed out. It is what it is. We'll keep moving forward. We've got a big show. We've got to talk about the Discmania Open, which I wasn't going to talk about, Yuli, but something came up, so I have to talk about it now, and I guess we'll just open up the can of worms and talk about everything. We've got the MVP Open coming up that we'll be talking about. I got into it a little bit with a PDGA employee on Twitter. You had a tweet that kind of went a little disc golf viral, if you will. So we'll bounce into your tweet, and we got some other topics to jump into. Before we get into that, though, this episode is brought to you by Double G Jerky. Today's episode is partnered with Double G Jerky. They have tons of flavors to choose from, like Hot Boom Sauce, Garlic Lover's Dream. or smash cracked pepper. They offer 1 ounce bags, which are perfect for a player pack or to enjoy on the course. Every bag sold helps promote youth disc golf with the Double G Children's Foundation. They have been able to provide discs and baskets for inner city children and have donated thousands of dollars to families in need. So pick up some Double G jerky and use code foundation for 10% off your order. And if you hear in the background, yes, Goose is eating crab. So he is just going ham on some crab legs currently in the background. All right. I think the video is good. Okay. The audio listeners, they could care less. They just want to hear a good podcast. And that is what we're going to give them today. So first things first, Tour Life crew members, we got new badges. We'll have Silas throw those up there. You start off first month, you got like a nice little gold star.
Nice.
Then you go into a nice TL for Tour Life, blue, green, red, bronze, silver, gold. And then you've got the Yuli Dark Horse logo to finish it off each month or whatever you kind of advance. So we got Ronnie Baker right now has got the red in the chat. So we appreciate all our Tour Life crew. Thank you guys so much. Tour Life Discs. We are in the process of finalizing the design for it. And we are still kind of working out what disc we want to do, what plastic we want to do. But our first Tour Life disc is officially in the works now. We just are going to kind of keep moving it forward. If you haven't yet, make sure you go over to Spotify or Apple, drop us a review on the podcast platforms. And Tour Life Jobs, if you missed last week, Tour Life Jobs interviews are coming soon. We're going to narrow it down to a list. And Yuli, if you want to be there, that's fine. If not, I can do it solo dolo. I don't care. We can bring in All Business Brad too. He's a scary person to talk to. Maybe, you know, throw a bright light in these people's faces to see if they can handle the pressure.
I like that.
And we'll bring those not live, but we will show you some of maybe the highlights or whatnot from the interviews on here. So you guys can kind of see where we're going with that. All right, let's jump into it. Discmania Open. I mentioned.
Yeah.
Wasn't going to talk about it.
Yeah.
No one was there. No. Really, no one was there. So I was like, we're just going to move past it. Am I being trolled? Has it come to the point now where legitimately people... Because this might have been a strategy. If we make a bad trophy, Brody will talk about the tournament. Because I was not going to talk about it. I wasn't going to talk about it. And then someone tweeted me a photo.
Yeah, I thought it was Photoshop.
Someone tweeted me the photo. And I was like...
It looks like a filter.
I was like, guys, I thought I was done for the year. I thought I was done. I thought... I could trust MVP Open. Yep. They were going to put out a good trophy. I could trust USDGC was going to put out a good trophy. Tour Championship. I don't even know if they give you a trophy. I think they just give you a fat check of like $50,000 probably this year. I thought I was done.
Yeah.
They sent me this photo. Silas can throw it up. And I've got some backstory, I guess, on it.
Yeah, I want to hear this because I don't know the backstory, but I need to hear it.
Yeah, I don't. That's not the photo, Silas. Did you went straight to the air filter? Okay, so this is the photo that initially was sent to me. So I'll turn my computer here so you can kind of see what we're dealing with here a little bit. Okay, first thing, the jersey's sick.
Yes, I agree. I thought that was absolutely legit.
They should have just left with the jersey.
Oh yeah,
just give out the jersey and let it be that. The C, a lot of people were like zooming in and they could see like it was like taped on. The reason for that is they didn't know obviously the sizes of the winners.
Okay.
So they figured out what the size was for whoever won. And then they kind of just like put the C on there. I believe they're going to give like a legit C for
patch it on there. Sew it on there.
I had a look at this photo. I normally I'm pretty quick on my ratings. Normally I see the trophy, I give it like 30 seconds and then I fire off a rating. This one, I literally said, I need time. I need time to decompress. I need time to think about this trophy. And then it got to the point where I was like, you know what? I don't think I can do it in words. I just gotta do it on the podcast.
Yeah.
Okay. Throw up the tweet now, Silas. Throw up the air filter tweet. So this was sent in by Hunter Green.
Same thing I thought.
Said, can't believe you'd be so insensitive to rip on a trophy without understanding the deep history Canadians have with ATV air filters. Clout chaser. It was a good tweet. It was a solid tweet. Very funny. Yes. My initial thoughts when I saw it was like pencil holder. Like maybe one of those things that you
what
get.
What is it? I gotta know.
It's just okay. So this is what it ends up being. I believe I saw from who I would think is the tournament director or someone that was close enough with the tournament director. They said they wanted every winner, because I guess they had an amateur event there as well. Mm-hmm. They wanted every winner to have something from the local area. They didn't just want to buy a trophy or something off the shelf, what they said. Yeah. They want something local.
I like that.
Then I think I got more information that it was the tournament director's wife, I believe, that made them. And so I think now the tournament director hates me.
Yeah.
Which, I'm not coming at the tournament. I'm just coming at the trophy. And like the jersey was sick. I don't know why we didn't just stick with the jersey. So each trophy, everybody got a unique pottery item of some sort.
Oh, that's what it is.
It's a piece of pottery. So
handcrafted piece of pottery.
Correct. FPO got it. MPO got it. All the AMs got it. Everyone got a piece of pottery. And this is what I'll say. And you've won a lot more disc golf trophies than I have. So I would love to hear your opinion on this. But I thought Simon put into a really good idea, and I said this on debate night. He said, when I win a tournament, the trophy doesn't really have a negative impact. If it's a bad trophy, it's kind of just like, all right, I'm not keeping this. But he did say, if it's a cool trophy, then it's like a positive. It's an even more of a, like, you're on high that you won, and then holy crap, look at this sick trophy I have. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I haven't gotten a lot of like trophies where I was like, ooh, what is this? You know?
Haven't got a bad
name. No. Okay. I don't think so. I mean, there are like dud trophies to where it's just like a plain Jane trophy. The pottery thing, now it makes a little more sense. Somebody handcrafted that and put in time out of their day to do that. I respect that part of it. I talked to my PR team, Brody. I talked to my PR team. This is what it comes because down to.
Do people say that same thing about you?
What?
Of when you have a bad round? Do people be like, yeah, but he like works so hard?
Yeah,
you
I
have
think no so. Idea.
I don't think Some so. People I think do. A lot of people don't care.
Some people
they just want results.
But if they're talking about it, So if there's a podcast talking about how junky I was as a player, totally fine. But there might be somebody in the podcast would be like, yeah, but that guy's been grinding for so long. He works so hard. That's possible.
Sure. There might be a couple people that do that.
That's possible.
But it feels like, though, in certain things, a lot of people stick to that. Like, you have no idea
One more thing. Like, what about this? I'm going to throw this out there. I just had a thought and it might be a good one.
Okay.
What about this? In art,
yeah,
there are some ugly things that don't make any sense that are very popular and very expensive and highly collectible.
Yes, you're right on that.
Right?
You go into a museum and you look at some stuff and you're like,
I don't know what that is.
Janky.
But some people are like, dude, that's, oh, you don't gosh, understand. This
incredible.
Person
is incredible. Yeah.
So you can't, it's a piece of art that doesn't make sense to a lot of people, but maybe in Canada, that piece of art, that piece of pottery is like really cool.
Sure. Let me throw out another scenario.
I got out of there.
In the future, we're going to have children, I presume.
Yeah.
They're going to go to the third grade art class and they're going to spend an entire week on some sort of art project.
Oh, I've made some bad.
They're going to bring it home.
Yeah. Out of
clothes. And in your head, you're going to be like, that's terrible.
I did that.
It doesn't matter how much time they put into it, how much effort they put into it. It's terrible.
Yeah.
And I think like that's what we're missing here is like, I'm not taking a shot at the tournament director. I'm not taking a shot at whoever made it. I'm not doing that. I'm literally just talking about what it looks like. And
what it looks like. Yeah.
It doesn't look good.
Yeah.
That has nothing to do with how long it took them to do.
What about this? What if, because this actually has happened.
Yeah.
I have a trophy.
Okay.
Okay. That I won at the, what is it? It is in Utah at the Full Throttle Challenge is what it was called. And it was up in Solitude Mountain Resort.
Okay.
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 The guy who made the trophies is like a world renowned artist.
Okay.
Who makes glass figures. The trophy that I got from him was worth a lot of money because he's world renowned. Mm-hmm. Now, when I saw this thing, I'm like, eh. But the fact that it has value in that.
That helps.
Helps.
For sure.
Right?
Yeah, because you sell it. Immediately just sell that thing. Throw it on eBay.
But that's pretty cool.
No, I agree. I mean, not everyone.
So what if this trophy, it looks like a complete awful trophy to you.
Yeah.
But what if it's worth like 20 grand? Does that change everything?
So you're saying it's the same exact trophy, but inside the trophy is a $20,000 Rolex is what you're telling me.
No, I'm just saying that it's worth that
to someone.
It's just, as a piece of art. What if it's worth 20 grand? Just saying.
I think you're on something there where like, the value of it, if someone else came up to you and was like, oh my God, that's so valuable. I don't think that necessarily changes your opinion on whether you like it or not.
Yeah.
Because when I go into a museum and I see these like, you know, priceless pieces of artwork, I don't just go, oh my God, that's incredible because it's priceless.
Yeah.
Like I get how some people think some stuff is good and bad. And what my point with a lot of these trophies is like, I think it's very similar to like movies. Some people love certain movies. Some people hate certain movies.
Yeah.
Like I love every Will Ferrell movie.
Mm-hmm.
There are some people out there that can't stand Will Ferrell movies. And it's not like I'm right and they're wrong or they're right and I'm wrong, but there are some things that the majority of people can objectively look at and be like, yeah, I don't know if that's a good trophy. So we'll leave it at that. But hopefully, you know, the tournament director doesn't hate us or hate me. And again, it's no disrespect.
I'm glad to the tournament director. PR guy.
It's no disrespect to the person that made it.
Sure.
It's simply just my opinion that
eyes, that thing looks awful.
Correct.
Yeah.
And the jersey was sick. That's what I don't get.
Yeah, the jersey
was so freaking sick. I don't understand why they had to do something extra.
And to your point, some people might look at the jersey and be like, I don't even know. Why is this big old thing? Like, correct. What is that?
Oh, we said jersey so many times. I think we should have been calling it a sweater.
Sweater?
A hockey sweater.
Yeah.
I think that's what someone...
You're right. You're right. You're
I said
right.
I was yeah. going no, to no, remember. No. I'm sorry.
And you did it. Yeah.
I don't know who it was.
But it is a sweater.
I believe we should be calling it a hockey sweater. Yep. So to all our Canadians up north, we greatly apologize and we hope you accept our apology. All right. Well, let's just talk about the event for a little bit real quickly and then we'll jump into some other stuff. For MPO, there wasn't really we got to shout this out. This guy, Ronnie Baker, this guy's been a member of the Tour Life crew for 6 months. So basically when we started, he said, everything is subjective and everyone can have their own opinion. I do like your takes on trophies and also that you speak your mind. I think at the end of the day, I think that's the big thing is like something that I sometimes think some people in disc golf are missing is when it comes to sports and disc golf is a sport. Mm-hmm. Last time I checked, people love talking about it. When you're passionate about a sport, you freaking love talking about it.
Yeah.
Heck, we have a podcast.
That's why we're on here.
Yeah, we have a podcast every week that we talk for 2 to 3 hours about disc golf. We love talking about it. And so you don't always have to take everything so personally and be like, we shouldn't be talking about that. As disc golf continues to grow, and if it ever does get to a level of where it is a top 10 sport in the US or a top 20 sport in the US, there are going to be more people coming on to talk about it.
Yeah.
And they're going to be talking about everything.
Yeah.
So that's just what it is. When you're passionate about something, you love talking about it. So that's how it is. Okay. Let's talk about the event now. So I'm going to pull up, let's see here. So there were 41 people in MPO.
Yeah.
With really just the big names being Eagle and Isaac. You had Gavin Babcock in there, who is just outside right now, the Tour Championship. Aiden Scott has had a couple good finishes. Jake Wolf, we've talked about him a lot. He had a great finish here in fifth. You got Thomas Gilbert, Connor O'Reilly, Alden Harris, Andrew Fish. So it was like what this field kind of looked like is it kind of looked like what a silver event should be, kind of, but just wasn't full, right? So on the MPO side, no surprise, it came down to Eagle and Isaac. They ended up going into a 6-hole playoff. I didn't watch. I don't know if you paid attention. I saw some clips on like I said, I was not planning on discussing this tournament at all, but here we are. I didn't see the holes. Apparently the holes were bad. See where like,
I didn't watch. Yeah. Sunday I realized it was on. It's football.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's the first week of football too. It's a tough week,
but then I'm like, oh, they're playing right now. Maybe I can get the last couple holes. So I got on there and right when I logged on, Eagle had just done the thing, and I was like, oh, okay.
Apparently, they did like a 2-hole loop 3 times. Eagle won it on the 6-hole, and I guess people were commenting or tweeting at me saying like the holes were kind of boring or there wasn't really scoring separation. But I think when you go to a playoff, because we don't have like golf carts, we don't have a way to transport people quickly.
Yeah,
you're kind of stuck with the holes that are around hole 18.
Yeah,
you know, you can maybe go to hole 1. You can maybe you're kind of stuck there. So it's not like hole 16, 17, 18 would be the best, but like 16 is going to take so long to go there. So you're just going to play 18. So that was pretty much it on the MPO side. I do want to bring up Eagle's late season push. I don't think it's being talked about enough. He currently is now, he's moved up now to number 1 in the world on UDIS world rankings.
Wow.
After that, which is a little bit surprising because, you know, people were saying like, he's only won 2 silver events.
Yep.
How the heck is he number 1? Well, let me tell you how he's number 1. Because when we talk about Calvin and him being number 1 player in the world and how consistent he is, this is StatMando threw this up on Twitter. He missed cash at OTB.
Yep.
After he missed cash at OTB, this is what he's done. First at Beaver State Fling, 5th at Cascade Challenge. He DNF'd at Portland. I think that the shoulder forehand thing. 4th at the Preserve. 4th at PCS. 4th at European Open. 2nd at Alland. 2nd at Deglow. 3rd at Worlds, 1st at Dismania Open.
Yeah.
The dude's been on an absolute tear the later half of the season.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not super surprised that he's number 1 in the world. It's also UDIS World Rankings. Take it for what you mean.
Which rankings do you like? We have a bunch of them. Do you like the UDIS?
I don't. I think I just look at the UDIS ones because those are the only ones that actually matter for something, right? Yeah. Those are the ones that will get you into certain events, majors. Those are the ones that matter when it comes to President's Cup. So those are ones I actually look at. Are those my favorite? Probably not. I think Ezra's brother, Judah, was doing one where I really liked, where it was like taking in the strength of field and like kind of giving a point system. And I think StatMando has one similar. StatMando has like 5 different kinds. I think one of theirs is similar to that.
Yeah.
So that one would probably be my favorite one out of all of them. But yeah, I mean, it is what it is. Okay, we're going to talk about FPO here in a second, but I gotta get your thoughts on this Prodigy post, okay? For context, there were 7 FPO players. 7. This is the Prodigy post. On Prince Edward Island, world champion Isaac Robinson staged a final round comeback to take the Dismania Open to a 6-hole playoff, ultimately finishing in 2nd place. Completely fine. Aiden Scott had his best career disc golf pro tour finish, and Isabel Bourque used an ace to finish top 10. Now, I will say, Isabel, for whatever reason, that one hole, she had the perfect disc, the perfect shot for it, because the hole that she aced, I think the second round or the next day, she like hit basket on the same hole.
Oh, wow.
So like she was dialed in. But, you know, she struggled. She didn't have the greatest tournament. You know, she finished in 7th place out of 7 people. But I just thought it was interesting whether you're like, do you think some of these FPO players are going to like put top, like should they put top 10 at a disc golf pro tour event? Should that be in their
Wikipedia, if you will, if there was only seven people in the event. And then bonus question, should there be a minimum amount of people in an event for the for them to be actually having a disc golf pro tour where they're giving pro tour points out? Should there be a minimum amount of people in an event?
I think the second one is an important one. I don't think you should be having seven person fields at the biggest tournaments that we got. I mean, it's the second biggest, well, third biggest. You got majors, you got elite, and then you got silver or whatever.
And so, Juliana Korver, who took third at this event, bumped out some people for the tour championship.
Yeah.
And I guess you could say, like, oh, well, if those people wanted points and they should have showed up at this tournament. I get that argument as well. But at the same time, like the scheduling of this, it's like leading into Maple Hill.
Yeah.
It was first week of NFL. It was in a different country. There's a lot of different things, but Elle Hansen takes it down first place, and Deanne Carey gets second with Juliana Korver taking third. That's what you'll see on the FPO side. There was another good question.
Probably a big push for some people trying to just, you know, I think one of the storylines that nobody really talks about is a tour card, like getting your tour card.
Ooh,
you know what I mean?
That's a good point.
Like 20 points is a lot of points when you're talking about your tour card for next season.
Mm. Okay. So this was brought up by Michael on Twitter. I thought this was an interesting one. And I think this is the main problem. We talked about this a little bit, but I just want to reiterate it after this one. He says, Brody Smith casually went after trophies at recent events. Call out the many touring players who canceled their attendance at the Discmania Open this past weekend, literally days before the event. You want the sport taken seriously? Professionals should act professional. This is still a very, this is still a major problem with the pro tour, and the people that it hurts the most are the ones that are on the grounds, like the people that are actually working the event. And I would also say like the fans, like those.
Oh, for sure. Spectators,
players dropping out super late. It's a bad thing. And the only thing I thought that could fix this would be you can't sell tickets until like Monday of the event. So that way, at least it gives fans a little bit of a heads up of actually who's playing. Cause again, for those that don't know how the tour card works, when you get your tour card at the beginning of the season, you can pay all the money up front and just be signed up for everything.
Yep.
And then throughout the season, you can kind of pick and choose like, okay, I'm not going to play that. I'm not going to play that. But that's the easier way of doing it versus having to sign up, because having to sign up is kind of, it's a little bit of annoyance. And also it just takes a little bit of time. So it's nice to just do it all at once.
Right.
But I do think some players forget that they're signed up, or some players just, you know, wait until the last minute. And that's why a lot of times, like next year, if you go and look when, you know, the week that Las Vegas Challenge is happening, go and look at all the events and you'll see like silver events that have all the top players on them.
I think,
and they'll eventually, like, obviously they'll drop out.
I think a good way to fix that is just to put like a C next to their name if they've confirmed. And you have to confirm in order. Ooh. So there's like a cutoff for you.
Okay.
As a player, like maybe 2 weeks before, you have to confirm. Otherwise, you're out. You know what I mean? So fans can look at it and look at the registration or the tournament director and be like, okay, all these players are confirmed. These ones are the ones that are coming. They have a C next to their name. And then obviously it won't work for everybody. Sometimes people get hurt and have to drop out for and sure. everything. But that might be a good idea.
I like that. And some people were confused too. We did a video in Canada, and then the timing of when we posted that video, I think some people were confused, or they didn't watch the entire video, and didn't hear us when we said, hey, we just finished D-Glow. We're heading to Worlds. We stopped in Toronto on the way.
Yeah.
I think some people were like, why the heck did you come up to Canada and play that course, but not play a tournament? Mm-hmm. That was before Worlds even happened. As soon as Worlds was over, I flew back home to spend time with Kelsey. And then Ezra, I believe, went to like New York, or maybe actually went straight here and maybe and started practicing. So we were actually not in, Canada when it happened. So, just to kind of clear that up, did you have anything else in the Discmania Open? I don't really have much else from that one.
Nope.
Okay. If you guys haven't checked out, make sure you check out the Heiser Club. You can get a free trial right now if you go to patreon.com/foundationdiscgolf. Tons of content over there with Hunter and Trevor and all the Foundation gang. So check that out. Heiser Club, free trial. We have our Heiser Club championships actually coming up in a few weeks. So I'm excited for that as well. All right, let's jump into a little bit of
Mom's just texted me, said she can't see us.
She can't see us?
Mm-mm. Blurry. Said blurry.
Oh, geez.
Sorry, Mom's.
Yeah. I don't know what's going on. It has, you know what? Here, let's have Silas. Silas, come on. Tell us what's going on here. I'm looking at 170 kilobits per second. What's going on here? My internet suck?
Internets are done.
See, because here's the thing. I'm going to do this speed test real quick. We have 330. I think there's something with the system. I think it's the system or something that we're using, because how... Might have to turn on speed. It's just unstable. Sometimes it drops. Guys, we have 341 megabytes down, and we have 11 megabytes up. I don't know what's going on. That should be really good. What is happening? You know what? We're going to call Silas. I'm getting to the bottom of this. Because at a certain point, you got to ask yourself, what the heck is going on?
This is the one time a week my mom gets to see me. So we got to fix this, dude.
This is huge. This is for Yuli's mom, man. We can't be messing around with this stuff. All right. Silas, talk to the people. How do I have over... Why do we look like a potato and we have, I have over 300 down and 11 up? What's going on?
It's your upload speed that matters, because you're uploading it to me.
11 up is trash?
11 up isn't that good, no.
But why is it saying that we're only doing 178 up? Or 185 up now?
Where does it say that?
At the top of our editing, the thing that we're in, the Ninja. Oh,
that's just for the room. That's just the preview.
Mm.
That's just the small preview.
So there's nothing I can do. Everyone that's watching this and says that we look like absolute trash, we just are screwed.
Yeah, it's just fuzzy.
That's sad, man.
But sometimes it goes and it fixes itself.
Hey, let it roll.
Internet,
all right.
Your upload speed isn't that good.
You know, and that's this is the life of Airbnbs. I tell you this much, this is not going to be a problem this offseason. I guarantee it. Guarantee it. So, all right, Silas, thanks for correcting that. Appreciate it.
I got a guy coming to my house who's going to just fix up my studio, dude.
Oh,
get everything. And he's going to fix my problem where my camera turns off every 12 minutes.
Oh, love that. Love that. Yeah, I'm going to, people are telling me that I need to connect to the Ethernet. Guys, listen, I would. But we are in an 1860 Victorian house. The fact that we even have Stranger's Wi-Fi in house. This house is crazy.
Yeah.
I've hit my head so many times in my room. My room was built for someone that was under 6 feet tall. It is what it is. 12 beers in, says Minnesota. So there you go. Sorry, guys, again, for the blurriness. It is what it is. I don't know. There's not much we can do. All right, we're moving on. Okay. Let's talk MVP a little bit.
Okay.
And then maybe we'll have Goose, are you down here? We might have you pop on, and I don't know where Ezra went. But if you want to pop on, we're going to talk some MVP right now. And
wipe your face from that crab.
You might have the most famous take on Maple Hill. So we need to bring you on for sure to get you on this take. So MVP Open starts this Thursday. 4-round tournament. Last year it was only a 3-round tournament due to weather.
Yeah, you look good.
And if you want to sit back, you can. You just have to hold that next to you, or you just have to lean forward. Whatever you want to do. But just the closer to you are to the mic, the better. And then Silas, you just text me if Gooseman sounds, if we need to raise him up or lower him down. So right now it looks like we should be able to get all 4 rounds in. However, this Hurricane Lee, I believe, might might have a different opinion on Saturday and Sunday, so we'll cross our fingers.
I was just looking.
You're looking. What do you think?
They said no land.
Okay.
They said no land. It'll go into outer bands. It's going into Canada.
Okay. So we might just get some outer bands in on Sunday. Yep. So hopefully it's not terrible.
But the forecast says sun Sunday.
We need a lot of sun.
Keep saying that.
The course is very, very sloppy.
It is, yeah.
And I mean, I don't want to steal Aaron's thunder here, but these are the worst tee pads we play all year.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. The worst tee pads. So feature cards here on the NPO side, you've got Calvin, Gannon, Isaac, and Ricky.
Well, they're not featured.
Oh yeah. Sorry. Good point.
Yeah.
So we're doing the same thing we did at Diglo. So the cards that will be on Disc Golf Network, these are the top eight spots. So you got Calvin, Gannon, Isaac, Ricky, followed by Kyle Klein, James Proctor, Eagle, AB. And then the tee times do the same thing. I love that. Again, I think
they should do that all year. Why not?
Totally agree.
Why not after the first tournament? It's just like you get a tee off where you are, first round.
The fact that we don't do morning and afternoon tee times, there's really not a reason not to do that.
Yeah.
If we're doing morning and afternoon tee times,
it should be random.
Then maybe random. But since we're not doing that, now
it's fair.
Okay.
You were in your last spot.
I was going to say, do you like that? Because you're a feature card kind of guy. Do you like that then of where we might get in a situation late in the season where it's the same seven guys every week on feature cards?
Right. That's a good point. I think it's worth mixing it up sometimes. I can see the positives of both sides because like also you could get stuck playing with the same person that you hate playing with every single week. You know what I mean? Like
play better or play worse. Right. It's in your hand. You just bomb. But it's like, no, this ain't happening.
I can't play with this guy again.
But the feature cards are the same players anyway, though.
It really is.
It's almost every tournament.
The only thing I will say is like, this does remove the sponsor pick. This does remove the tournament pick, I guess, if you will. And sometimes you get to see like a Zach Arlinghouse at Idlewild. Right. That would essentially remove those picks. I don't know how people would feel about that. But it would be an interesting thing. Something that they do have to look into though is the way that we currently have it set up where you have FPO, and we're all on the same course. When you have FPO go out in the morning and MPO go out in the afternoon, we've had multiple times this year where rounds have had to be delayed or canceled or whatever they are. They need to look into how do we get everyone through, whether that's the pace or play thing that we've talked about, whether that's, hey, we need to start people on hole one and start people on hole 10 and have two tee times go out like that to where we fill up the course way faster than the way we're doing it. We got to figure out a creative way of getting people through. Because it is a problem.
Yeah, I feel like doing that, starting people on 10 just right away, bam, people go out on 10, you'll save an hour right there. Easy.
If they start with FPO oh my gosh,
you'd save an hour.
Yeah, because you almost, I don't even know, does FPO normally have 18 cards is what? That's 72?
They don't have that.
They don't ever have 72 people.
56, 50 to 56, 40.
So FPO, they literally could do that and not have to worry about like, they just have them go all out and they'll be done in 2.5 hours.
Mm-hmm.
So they tee off at last tee time is 9 o'clock. They're done at 11. Yeah. That would help, I think, a lot. I don't know. Something to think about.
I think one big thing you could do to help with this stuff, this is like a different boat of the same thing, is we shouldn't play the East Coast swing at the end of the year during hurricane season. It's like the last four turns we've played have just been absolutely brutal.
Because USCGC's gotten the effects from it too, right?
Plenty of times. I've played three USDGCs where there was hurricanes involved. Three.
Dang.
One of them was crazy. Just we were playing with a river running through 11. It was insane. A river just... Dude, I think I shot a two... I was in 47th. I shot a two under. It was the second best round of the tournament, and I jumped in the top 10.
That was the year that Calvin was like perfect for 10.
Yeah.
Right?
There was another one where I was like in 40th and I got a top 10 with like a 2 under.
He was wearing that like yellow gold shirt, didn't have an umbrella, which is like shredding. Just a wet rat out there, just shredding every hole.
That year, though, I teed off, I was in 40 something. I teed off, I birdied the whole front nine. And then I got to the hole nine and it just started downpouring. And I parred out and I had the best round.
Oh,
yeah. And jumped up. Dude, people were shooting like 22 over on my cart.
Some of those holes would be a nightmare to play in terrible condition. It's
crazy.
My gosh.
For real.
All right. So I put on Twitter, I put on a poll. I said, Maple Hill is, and then a line, basically like fill in the blank. And I gave two options. Some people didn't like that I gave two options, but here's the thing. Here's the thing, guys. If a course is ranked number one in the world, there are two options. Is it the number one ranked course in the world, or is it overrated? Those are the two options. You don't need a middle ground if it is the number one rated course in the world on UDisc. So pick one. Some people didn't like that. I had to just explain myself of why. 66% of people on Twitter that voted said number one rated in the world.
Curious how many of those people have actually played the course. Just to be fair, like a lot of people are voting in that have never actually.
Well, here's the thing. I've talked to so many people who
Don't like the course.
Love the course. Love the course. Overrated.
Okay. Yes.
Yeah. Definitely. I love overrated. This place. I will throw out there that if somebody asks me what course should I play if I'm going to play any tour course in the world, I'll probably say Maple Hill. I'll be like, you'll go to Maple Hill.
It's a destination spot. Like it is.
Time. It is nice.
Every hole you've seen on TV, you'll be like, oh, it's this hole. That's so cool. You'll have a great experience playing it.
It's well manicured, well taken care of.
Listen,
it's just tough for tour players.
It's one of the most popular players for several reasons. It was way past its time. Or how do you say that? Above its time or whatever. Before its time. Like it was so good back in the day. You know what I mean?
Yep.
However you word it. It was always so good compared to the other stuff that we played. Then Simon came in and he lives here. And there is a lot of traffic that goes through his channel.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the main reasons I think it's one of the most popular places ever. It really is. Because at this point, Simon's the most popular player on the planet, right?
Mm-hmm.
This is his home course. That has a little something to do with it.
It's a good point.
Right. So it's very popular in that sense. And everybody, because of how, listen, it used to be a destination spot for the tour because you get here and this was the tournament. This is way before your time.
Playing ping pong up in the.
You come here and it was just this fun place to where we didn't have anything like that. Right. You came here. Play ping pong, pool, there's putting games, all this stuff, different side events where you can make a little money. Everybody, it was a big old party. It was awesome. It was absolutely a blast. The tour's past everything being a blast. Guess what? This is a job. There's nobody's playing side events. It's more serious. It really is. It's more serious. There's no spot for that. So new generation comes in. And now you're just playing the course, which is still a great course. Now, I love that course. I think that it is the most challenging course for shot shaping off the tee that we play all year. Okay? Except for hole one, and let's say hole 11 or whatever.
There's a couple.
But other than that, like you go hole two, hole three, hole four, hole five, hole six. It switches up your angles and your speed that you're throwing on almost every single hole all the way through the whole place. It's tough off the tee. That's what I love about it. What I don't love about it, I've said this before. And the reason I don't love this about it is because we don't have a true disc golf course yet. It's a tree farm. It is a tree farm. I watched part of your guys' practice round. Simon gets to hole 12.
Yep.
And he goes, just 2 weeks ago, these things were 2 feet shorter. That means the course is changing before your very eyes within 2 weeks, depending on how many Christmas trees stay and how many Christmas trees go.
Mm-hmm.
So you could show up and the fairway on almost all the holes that are open change every single year.
Yeah.
They change every single year. So you don't know what you're getting. Like you're throwing into a tree farm.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So let's get this straight. It is a disc golf course, but is it also a tree farm?
probably is more it, a tree farm than a disc golf okay. course, right?
I disagree with that. I think this is the number one disc golf
in
the world.
I meant that more like from the business side. Like whoever owns that land.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe. Like I don't know that, how that works.
I don't either,
this
but
way more famous
this is more disc golf.
Yeah.
Well, I mean,
yeah, of course.
A tree farm. Like, yeah, but, I don't know if you can have a famous tree farm.
Probably not. Probably not.
Maybe where they get the Rockefeller, the Rockefeller tree.
My point is, okay, let's go to a golf course.
Yeah.
The best one in the world.
Yeah.
And then let's get a Christmas tree on hole 12 when we're done. That's never going to happen. It's a disc, it's a golf course.
Yeah.
It's there for golf.
Yeah, for sure.
We don't, this is not, it's the number one disc golf course in the world. And it's unranked in, as far as being a tree farm. But it's both. Okay. There are roads that lead to every single basket that make the fairway on almost every single hole.
I've never thought about this until you said it, and I noticed it for the first time this year.
Hole one.
It's blatantly true.
This is my last thing, because I get wrecked every time I come back here, even though I say it's my favorite place to play, because it is a fun, very challenging disc golf course, okay? Hole one, fairway.
Mm.
Changes every year when the trees come and go. Fine. Okay, whatever. You still have a nice little landing zone. The landing zone is a road. It is a gravel road. If you land in a perfect spot to where you're aiming, you're landing on a gravel road. Let me ask you guys, have you ever thrown off a gravel road? Is it fun?
A few times. Haven't had much fun with it.
No, not fun. Okay, that's fine. Think about all the other holes. They're all gravel because they're running their gators through there going to get trees to take them back so that people can have their trees. I don't like that. I don't like throwing a fairway shot down hole 8, one of the best holes on the course, right down a gravel rip. Seven.
Yeah. No, I feel you on that. Question to you, and then Aaron, we have to hear why. You know, I want you to expand on why you don't like the course for the tour, for playing on tour. But can there's a question for you guys and a question for everyone listening? Is it possible to have a bad home course?
Home course.
Like, is it possible to be like, hey, that my home course isn't a good disc golf course?
Yeah.
But is it though? Because I
mean, it's all you got, but it still could be trash.
I know, but I don't really hear that. I feel like everyone loves their home course. No. And so when you come and you have anything negative to say about
a course. What is the definition of a home course? The one you play all the time?
Yeah.
Or the closest one to your house?
I think
the one you play all the time,
I would say, is probably the home course. And it feels like every time when we did the same thing with De La, Ezra, if you want to pop in between, I can do this. And then you and Aaron can kind of share the mic. Yuli, go to your left a little bit. Keep going. Okay. Now we're on. All right. I just feel like whenever I have anything to critique about a course, the majority of people that are coming after me are people that like, that's their home course. And my question is like, can you just have a bad home course? I don't know if you can. It just seems like everyone's home course, they love it. And if you say anything bad about it. But
comparatively to other courses, you could rank your course and be lesser than other ones.
Sure. But it just seems like everyone gets offended.
On that scale, then your course is trash compared to Maple Hill.
I don't think they would say that, though.
I think that what you're struggling with here is people taking things objectively.
And they just get like really offended.
There's so much bias. And then I would also say that like most people that have a home course, they have got like 6 or 7 courses they could play. And this is the one they choose to play all the time. This is the one they're like, hey, this is the best one of all of those. So they've got kind of a point in like, this one actually is a good course. And then, like you said, if you come through and you just are like, oh, this is terrible, hate this. They're like, whoa, there's a lot of good things about my course too.
Yeah.
So,
there's good things about, I'm telling you, this place is awesome. It's awesome. It's a challenge. And that's what I like. It's a hard course to score on. I love that. I love all those things about it. But when we're talking about
tour,
and what I'm thinking is I'm sometimes a forward thinker, right? Like I think about the course and what could be, what my dream of a disc golf course is, like, what is the best? Like when I think of the best, you know what I mean? We don't have it yet.
No.
And we're not even close. And so when people say that this is the best place, listen, Fox Run is better than Maple Hill.
This is probably one of the best courses like a decade ago, too.
Oh, it stood the test of time.
The tour has just been increasingly improving, so I think we're going to continue to outgrow like all three courses.
I was going to say, I've seen a better course every year I've played this tour.
Yeah.
Each year, I'm like, wow, I have a new favorite course.
Do you guys think the best course?
Maple still have a lot of good holes, too, though.
Oh, it's awesome. Do you think Fox Run is a better disc golf course than Maple Hill, though?
Yes.
Yes?
I do.
I agree.
And why?
I think Voosel's.
Yeah, but what? But why? I'm asking you why. The holes, the shot shaping and everything isn't better. The shots that we throw at Maple Hill are way more challenging, our level of play than Fox.
I agree with that.
One of the things Fox has that's really nice is a great variety of shots. It's got tons of park, wooded, open, with like the Tito Bees on the open hole, stuff like that. So you almost get every aspect of the game in the same course, except for the length. That's the one thing, in my opinion, that Fox is missing is just some raw distance on a few of the shots.
See, my take with it being, I think everybody, not everybody, but a lot of people would agree with Fox being a better disc golf course. One of the things that it is better is aesthetically pleasing as a disc golf course. Having the grass everywhere, going through and seeing the lake right or the pond right there, and the way that it's structured is just way more appealing to me as a disc golf course. I feel like I'm on the closest thing we have to a country club type course. You know what I mean? It feels professional.
Mm.
This place that we're playing, it's a tree farm. Okay, it is. It really is. That's not me.
Julie hates Christmas.
No, that's not me throwing shade at the place. I'm just saying, okay, so now we take Fox, just hear me out here, and we put 20,000 Christmas trees everywhere that change constantly. Are we still putting it as a better course than this? I don't think so. I really don't. They're not there.
I don't think the only reason Maple is a walls course is because of the
Christmas trees. But I'm saying
I think it's mainly walls because there's a lot more like bad holes.
Yeah, but we already
Fox doesn't have like the handful of bad holes.
Fox does have a couple super dinky holes though.
Yeah. I mean, yes, they're all dinky, but they're not as bad.
Here, hold this.
Hold this close to you. They aren't as bad as hole 4 and hole 4 and 6. I wouldn't say all 6. I think 6
is almost the exact same thing.
2 is three, though, at least. Two is more for.
Would you put Maple Hill in the top 5 courses that we play all year?
No.
No? I would say yes. I would say yes. As far as the way it plays, yes. The scoring average.
Brody, when we did the thing last year.
The scoring average is.
Last year, I might have, but I feel like we played better courses. But yeah, it is. Now, this is a good question. Is the scoring average low because of what we want it to be, how we want it to be low, or is it low because of some of the flukiness that we see?
I think if you have a clean round at Maple, it feels way better than having a clean round at any other course because there are demanding tee shots. Demanding.
When you say clean rounds, you can't throw clean tee shots on every hole. That's impossible.
That's not impossible.
I don't think it's ever been done.
A clean tee shot on
every single hole.
I mean, Barry Scholes shot a 59 back in the day, and it was absolutely bonkers.
So there's a difference between that.
Oh, and Paul had the greatest round ever played at Maple Hill. He beat the field by 11, I think, or something. Crazy. He shot a 47. Think about that.
What's the par? 68?
60. So some of the holes have changed.
Might I say 68? That was really 60. Bad.
Still, I think he shot a 47 out there. It was insane.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what
we're gonna need
this
week, Jules. Yeah, for real.
Par 60.
All right, let's bounce to some of the course changes. So one thing that Maple Hill has done and continues to do is continues to change. They continue to try to look at ways, and again, because they are on a tree farm, they are kind of limited of what they can do and can't do. It seems like they've kind of maxed out the land, if you will, on some of these holes. It doesn't seem like they could. I guess you could pull the tee pads back on some of them as well to make it a little bit more challenging, but they have made a lot of changes this year.
So I completely disagree with that. I think they have a ton of land on the property. The issue is that everybody goes into it with the how can we make this hole harder or longer or things like that and not change the hole that we already
just
have.
Just get rid of it.
It's impossible. If you don't want to change the entire course, if you want to leave the course exactly how it is, You can't make it any longer.
Some of these trees they have out there, Like, who's waiting to buy these things? Are they going to put them in a freaking hotel lobby? Have you seen those monsters? Sorry to interrupt you, but they're freaking giant. And it just went into my... Like, who's getting those?
Okay, so to your point, that's exactly what they did on hole 9.
Yes. Yes.
Right. Yep. Hole 9 has one of the better greens on the course. It's the one that's kind of like tucked, goes down the hill, and it's like kind of tucked in a little cove, and there's water on the right. And it used to be a pretty fluky tee shot. Majority of people just kind of chucked shots up the hill, and then you just hope that you didn't hit any of the trees that were in the fairway. They now have extended that hole quite far, way down left. So now when you leave hole 8, you take maybe a 60-second walk down by the water.
A little longer for some people.
Yeah, a little longer for people, yeah. And now it's a super... Yeah, no, I didn't even get that. That was a pace of play question. And oh my gosh, you're right. That's going to be a 5-minute walk for some people. Oh,
I set him off.
Oh, I'm not looking forward.
Hold on.
I'm going to get... If I'm playing with anyone, I'm going to get to the tee pad. I'm just going to be like...
Do you guys like it?
The new hole?
Yeah.
Love it. I think it's a great change.
I think it's got a little bit of work to do, but I think it's definitely a way better hole than it was last year. I think it's close to being like a really good hole.
Yeah.
But the thing is, like, I think Steve said, he's like, they don't want to cut too many trees down, so you can't really add them back. So they'd rather on this side of it, which I think makes sense.
I think my biggest issue with it is that it's super challenging and it's a shot that I'm bad at throwing. So for me, my actual play is to kind of just throw down the center of the gap at the wall of trees and hope I get lucky. And that every time I say that to a course designer, they cringe. They're like, oh, I hate that that's your play.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's the highest percentage play for me because I'm taking a par regardless. And every now and then I'll get lucky through those trees and have a play for birdie.
Yeah.
Well, you know that was a better shot. You're just doing that. That's your highest.
So we like it. Exactly.
I like it a lot.
Okay.
Yeah. It is going to cause a lot of backups. Especially that right side rough. Oof. They haven't really cleaned out the undergrowth there. If you go and look at most of the rough on these holes, it's so easy to find your disc. It's so nice. Like you can be 60, 100 feet off the tee. You can walk right up to your disc. They haven't done that yet on that hole. There needs to be like two spotters on the right side, or it's going to cause some serious backup problems with kicks that go over there. So I'm expecting at least when I show up to that tee pad, I'm expecting at least two cards on there.
Check.
So it is what it is. I think that hole had backups though already last year.
It did. Yeah.
So I don't know. It'll be interesting to see if it's better or worse, but I don't think it's going to be completely
clean.
It's either gonna be the same or it's gonna be worse.
Yeah,
I don't think it'll be better.
I like that you can tee off and not have people going absolute bananas over like a shot going in the drink.
Yes, that is nice.
I've been teeing off on that because it's right next to the green, the eight holes. They freaking
agreed.
Rah, like it was like.
The other thing I'll say is I was a little disappointed when I heard that they were going to do basket changes on Saturday. And we saw it at D-Glow. They did, I believe, on three holes. Yeah. They're doing it on three holes here, hole 1, 2, and 3, which I thought was interesting that they decided to do it on the first three holes and not like spread it out. But do you guys know why? Because I'll maybe let you guys explain why.
I guess it's just ease of access. It's
no, you talk to Steve, so maybe I'll let you explain why, because I thought it was a good idea. But what I'll say before is I was a little disappointed because when I heard basket changes, I was thinking in my head like, ooh, these might be more challenging and maybe we'd be great to have on like Sunday to put harder baskets to like make you think. But go ahead and tell you what Steve told you, who is the one that kind of designs everything.
So I had a long conversation with Steve and he had a lot of really interesting points. And this is one I hadn't thought about, but basically his whole premise behind it is he made three easier pin positions on 1, 2, and 3. And his thought is that if you're, down on the leaderboard, you're in 20th place, 30th place, something like that. And you just birdie the first three holes, all of a sudden you're in contention and everybody at home will be like, oh wow, it's a fight. It's a battle. All these players are like right near each other. And I see what he's saying because like I've had tournaments before where I'll be like 10 down through 12 holes and I'll be in like 50th place to start. But all of a sudden I'm in first place on UDisc.
Yeah.
And obviously, I'm not going to stay there, but it's such a cool thing. They'll send a camera out.
Yeah.
You know, you get some coverage. They'll be like, oh, what's happening here? It's a really cool aspect. I think the fans love it. And so a lot of things Steve's done is to really help with how viewable the course is and everything.
I think hole two is the same shot for me.
Hole three is two.
Yeah, nothing changes for that one. Or one changes a little bit, but one, I usually play to that.
They're all easier, though.
One is easier. Oh yeah. One is for sure easier because me and you threw bad tee shots today, way right. No chance at getting within 50 feet of the normal basket. You could throw right underneath the basket for...
Or you could throw it to the mouth now and just make it.
Yes, you don't even have to put an OB into play.
Same thing with hole two. You can just hit the wall, and you've got, like, circle's edge putt.
Yeah.
Versus you hit
was
the wall.
Was that wall there last year?
Yes, it was. I think that's a good change, but...
I couldn't remember. In the practice round, I'm like, I don't remember the wall.
It's
more
beefy than it was last year, I think.
Yeah.
I think it's beefed up.
Yeah. Okay.
It was like an advertisement.
Oh, okay. Check.
All right. Another stat here from Stat Mando. I thought this was very interesting. Calvin Heimberg has finished top 20 in 22 straight events on tour. The last time he missed a top 20 was the MVP Open. So last year was the last time he missed it. And then you've got Ricky at 13, Ezra Robinson at 10.
Silas, he's got a good name. What can I say?
I think that's your biggest rival.
Let's talk
about the Ezra Robinson Ezra rival because I think it's something that's not talked about enough
and it's shaping up to be.
What are your thoughts, man?
If there needs to be a rivalry, we can have a rivalry. I don't know. Right now, we're like neck and neck in points, so it's kind of who can finish the highest with the same name, I guess.
Yeah. It's not about like who the best Ezra on tour. You know, we don't have to. When someone says like Ezra shot 10 down, they think of who's the better player at the moment. So.
Yeah.
Right now, it's
he's got he's got me points right now. So I'm looking for a big showing here at this event.
Wow, there is no betting in disc golf, but if there was, I would put a lot of money on Ezra Robinson and Isaac Robinson because when those guys are walking their practice rounds and they do not have bags and they're just walking with five discs. That's when they're the deadliest.
Really?
And that's what they were doing this week. No bag.
No.
Just walk.
They're all fine. They smoked us in a doubles match. five discs each. We don't. Yeah. No.
It was.
I mean, I should DNF, honestly.
Yeah. So, you guys let us know who's the best Ezra. Who are you guys rooting for? Might be one of the bigger rivalries up and coming. People are talking Isaac and Gannon. Well, no, Ezra and Ezra.
Give us a couple seasons when we're both at the top. I think that's probably why people talk about Isaac and Gannon, and then it'll be more of a thing, maybe.
Who's your biggest rival?
Ooh, you don't want to know. Go ahead. Let him know.
I'm not sure I want to
disclose
this information.
Highest rated finish player.
Oh, my goodness.
So okay. I think you need it. I got to
give the context here. My rival on tour, according to me, is Nikola Santola.
Oh,
all right. Okay. This is a dark horse. The reason for this being, we had very similar seasons last year.
Yeah.
We had a lot of good finishes. He took second place at a major. I took second place at a major. Our rating points or our pro tour points were like neck and neck the whole time.
Yeah.
And then our U-Disc power rankings were like, Nicholas was like sixth and I'd be like 35th. And I'm like, how does this happen? So I kept complaining about it enough that Ezra and Brody were like...
We're like, I think you don't like this.
I actually love playing with Nicholas. He's a really cool guy.
Brody, I think this is your rival.
Give me yours. Who is it?
What's my biggest rival? Slow players. And I will.
Oh, that's generic, a bailout answer. You got to have an actual
who, no, that was I, me one
I,
tournament.
And I will legitimately start. I said, I am going to start calling people out. I said that. After the last round, after whatever tournament I just played, which... What was the tournament that I did terrible at? Was that Worlds? Probably it was Worlds. Whatever. After that round, I swore that I'm gonna start calling people out for being slow, and I'm just gonna do it.
You look at it. You look at the leader.
Starting now.
No, you look at the leaderboard, and you're like, you look for somebody. Who's the guy you look for?
As what?
As like?
No, people used to do that to me though.
Yeah.
And I would like Jordan Castro for the longest time. Still hasn't beaten me yet. Like when I first came on tour, he would just tweet me stuff. I did that when I first got on tour.
Yeah.
And I think,
started Ezra, checking them off.
Yeah. I think Ezra has talked about this a bit, which is like, we look for qualifiers, right? And so instead of
looking at my game and seeing how I played, I was like, oh, I beat this person, so I did pretty good, yep. Which I don't think is a good thing of doing.
Right.
Because if I beat someone, but I played poorly for my skill level, I don't think that is really helpful.
Yeah.
It's helpful to my ego to be like, oh my gosh, this guy's been playing for 10 years. I beat him. But I don't think that was actually super beneficial for me. So I don't actually really do that ever. Even if I got like 35th and I beat Calvin, I don't think I'd be like, oh, well, I beat Calvin.
Oh, I used to do it though. My last,
I think a lot of people do that. I think a lot of people still do that.
Last person that I checked off my list back in the day when I was a youngster. Guess who it was? The last one.
Scott Stokely.
It was Avery Jenkins. Ooh. I couldn't get him. I knocked down Kenny, Felberg, Nico, all these guys. Avery was the hardest to get.
On a similar note, in Colorado, like all my buddies are like, dude, I've beaten Eagle before, because they're all like 5 years older than me.
Yeah.
And so they like beat him when he was like, I never had. Okay. Yeah. I played juniors against him my whole life.
Oh, no.
I think it was the World Championships was the first time I beat Eagle McMahon.
No,
like last year.
Oh my God.
It was something ridiculous time. Like that.
Dude, but the biggest rival in Colorado is Joe Revere.
He was just telling me a story of like a playoff event. He did a step putt from like 60 feet, and like as it left his hands, he just turned and looked at the person that he did it was in a playoff with as he just walked, staring at him.
He stepped in and then just stared down. Like, I don't think want him to be your rival because
nobody wants Joe as a rival. I promise you, that guy is
The only person that's his rival is anyone ahead of him.
One Joe story. This is a true story. Okay, true story. Kale and I are touring together, and we go to these A tiers, and we're playing together. And our last stop was Colorado, and him and I won every A tier on this stop. We get to Colorado, and Joe's in a cast, broken arm, literally, or pulled muscle, something in his left arm. And he's playing, and we're like, the dude waxed us with a broken arm. I'm not kidding. State championship, eighth year, he beat us. Just smacked us up. You can't beat a guy like that. No. He's just going to beat you with a broken arm.
He's a monster.
I'm getting a little flack from the chat saying that I didn't name any names. And they're saying that I'm scared.
Well, I'll go.
I'm
I'll
scared
go.
To name names.
I'll name my name.
Yeah.
Maybe it's a Tool Life podcast. Maybe those like little in our podcast battle.
Me and Yule.
Well, mine is.
I'm probably stalled something, you know?
Mine's Big Germ. I look at his every time. Like, and I guarantee he looks at mine. I'm always just like, where's he at?
Yeah.
And we're always pretty similar.
Is that what you, I guess, is. Because, like, to me, when it came to, like, rivalry games, right?
Yeah.
Those games, I just wanted to beat those people so bad. I wanted to beat everyone.
Yeah.
But I wanted to beat those people so much worse. And I would also look and root against those people.
I don't
remember. Or those teams. Yeah. It's more for teams. It's harder for, like, individuals, obviously. But more for teams, it's like, you know, if Michigan goes out and loses to someone terrible, it brings me a little bit of enjoyment.
Yeah.
Being an Ohio State fan. Right. So I don't know if that really necessarily happens in disc golf. There's not really like anyone that I'm like actively rooting against.
No, I just don't want him to beat me. My guy.
Well, I don't want anyone to beat me, but
when you're not winning the tournament and you're down here,
I'm doing
in
that
the
a lot.
Gutter, which is where I'm at.
A lot.
So you can understand that's where I am too. That, you know, I got my guy.
To me, though, like, I don't, to me, I wouldn't say necessarily rivals. I would just say there's like people that I don't like to play with.
Who is it?
Say
it, Brody.
There are slow players.
And then there is.
I'm going to categorize and say there are slow players. And then there's players that talk to you like you're their caddy.
Okay.
Those are the two type of players that like, I just don't. I'll say this.
Who does both?
Yeah,
who's slow and talks to them? I don't know. I don't know if there is someone.
No.
You want them on the pod at some point, so you can't like have them hate you.
Well, no. And here's the thing too: is like I don't hate these people.
Yeah.
Tristan.
The rivalry thing for disc golf is
Tristan stopped playing with us because he doesn't like playing with me practice rounds because I don't stop talking.
Oh, is that your rival? Tristan.
No. But I don't
like. But
I also don't get. I don't get offended. I don't get offended if someone plays a practice round with me. Is like I don't ever want to play that guy again because like if me and Ezra are like in a debate, which if you played a practice round with us, we tend to get into these, you know, pretty heavy debates when we're playing. And like, if you're the type of player where you're like, I want complete silence when I'm trying to make this 20-foot putt in practice, I'm probably not the best person to play with.
Right.
Because if me and Ezra are going back at it, I'm not going to be like, oh,
we're not stopping.
Hey, wait 1 second, please. We got to let this guy putt. Okay. And I'm not going to do that. So I get it. It's okay. It's not a big deal. But yeah, it is what it is. But I will start calling people out when they start playing.
Just slow. Bouncing around this thing like a,
it's my
like
thing.
A bouncy ball.
Next time I'm on a card with him, I'm just going to walk super slowly and not stop talking to him.
Yeah, and I'm going to call the TD and say, you need to get out here immediately. All right, Disc Golf Pro Tour standings. Let's run through it real quick. We got a nice little graphic here. This was surprisingly way closer than I thought on the FPO side.
Right, I saw that too.
With Kristen Tatar, she's at 1,208 points with Missy Gannon pretty close behind, 63 points behind at 1,135. Then it goes Owen, Ella, Holland, and then it starts dropping off about 100 points with Katrina, Kat, Sarah, Haley, Jessica Weiss. I think this is because Kristen doesn't have full points.
I was just going to say, I think that one of the main reasons is because you're capped out. Yeah, I don't know if she has a full month, but like you can only get so many points. There's a little maximum number of points
that's
you
a good
can
point.
Get. And if like Missy Gannon takes second place at every single event that Kristen's winning, and then she wins a couple on her own, it's going to be a lot closer than you would think.
That's actually a great point. It'd be interesting to see what these numbers would be if there was no cap, if they didn't drop anything.
Right.
All right. On the MPO side, the top, there could be a little bit of movement. Dude, our internet is on the struggle bus. So again, I apologize for anyone watching this. If you're listening to this,
we can't
yeehaw.
Even pull it up.
Yeehaw. So the top three all are over 1,000 points. You've got Gannon, Isaac, and Calvin, with Calvin 110 points or so ahead of Isaac. So those three are all pretty above everyone else. Then you've got Ricky, Eagle, AB, Kyle, James, Cole, Simon, and Matty O.
You know what a surprising one up there is?
Who's
Ricky? Because he missed like half the season.
Same with Eagle.
He didn't play an event until Music City.
That's bonkers.
Yeah. And then Eagle missed a good portion too. Didn't play DMC. Yeah. Didn't play played, but dropped out. Didn't play DDO. Yeah. Those are just guys that their drops are like their bad tournaments are still really freaking good. They move up there. All right, let's talk about bubble people. Because these are the people, if you're watching, these are the people to look out for. I think right now, I think these guys are all good. I'm going to say Nico's the first bubble player at 420 points. He's got about a 50-point lead over Robert Burridge, who's in 32nd. But I would say Nico, Mason Ford, Presnell, and Vino, all four of those guys, if they don't play well and guys underneath them play better, they could all drop, right? 60 points, 50 points, that's like a top 10. And if they don't get that great of a finish, they could drop. But realistically, we're probably just looking at Prez and Vino. And then you got Robert Burridge, Chandler, and then yourself, Yuli, at 360. So you're right now at 36 points off of Vino.
Yeah.
Which would essentially be, if you got like a top 10, you would need Vino to probably finish like outside the top 25.
Yeah.
Is probably what you would need. And then obviously you would need Chandler and Robert to finish behind you as well. I would say maybe Garrett Gerthy might can sneak in there at 355, but that's a lot of points. That's almost 50 points there. So those are the people that if you're paying attention, you care about the tour championship at all, those are the people to be looking at.
We got
to
look at the second bubble too. I think tour card bubble.
Oh my gosh.
This is going to be the,
I'm yeah, still,
the
last this is why card. Aaron's on the show right now. The tour card bubble. Do you know what the line too. Is?
I think it's 80.
80.
80? Okay.
84, you said?
No, 80 was what it was last year. Yeah, that's 80. What I would assume.
All right. So this is the tour card bubble. This is actually probably more meaningful.
Parker.
Oh, okay. I got confused for a second because they just
it confuses everyone when they
every single
it.
Time I see that I get so confused. All right, so we're gonna go down to 80. Okay, so well, let's go to like 70 here. So here we go. 70. You got Jake Mon, Nate Sexton, Jake Wolf, Paul Oman, Connor Rock,
Mason Marchbanks, Lori Lettinen, Thomas, Miro, Connor Riley, and Chandler Fry. All those guys are in as of right now.
As of now, it's 100. Chandler Fry has 124 points. So, like a win at this event is over double that. So, I mean, like a huge finish from someone would bump you up dramatically.
And that's where it could be scary, because if Silver Law, which I don't think he's actually at this. No, he is.
There can't be a ton of people below that aren't either in the event.
So you have Silver Law, Justin Rozak, Clay Edwards. Those guys are in this event. They could all get their tour card. Outside of that, I think that might be it. Linus Carlsen.
But he's a good example of 100 points would get him a tour card.
Correct. 100 points would.
Top five finish, and Linus jumps up all the way from
150 points would put him at 178, which would put him, which would put him in like.
That's a win, but like just like
a top 10.
Top five would get him a
top five.
Points. Yeah.
Yeah. He could potentially jump in with a top five. So, interesting stuff there for tour cards. And I think that's going to get, we said some big names. That are kind of on the bubble for tour cards, where I think
I was nine tournaments in 79th. So yeah. I was watching that line being Jeez. Like, wow, I'm playing the worst. I hope I get a card next year. That was stressful.
So
I know what they're going through.
It's getting tougher and tougher. That is for sure. All right, we're going to move into ratings now, because we actually had a decent conversation off air earlier about ratings. So, we've got the PGA throwing new FPO all-time high. Kristen Tatar, 999.
They had to do it to her.
Rated.
They do it to everybody. You don't just go and you get your 1,000. They pop you at 999.
Happened to me too.
Did it?
Me. Yep.
Did it?
Yep.
It, me too. 1 month's trial. I think mine was 998. And I'm like, are you kidding me? Like,
it's tough.
Took me like 6 months after that.
I think I dropped down.
So we're going to lead into your tweet here, Yuli, because I think this is perfect. So you said ratings need to go on the pro tour level. They mean nothing. Do you want to expand on that a little bit?
Yeah. No, I don't think they do. And there's several ways to explain it, but I don't know what your rating is. I don't know what your rating is. I don't know what your rating is. I know they're higher than mine. Not because of anything, but I know you guys play better than me. Now, if I were to play really good and let's say I take a top three, would anybody be that surprised?
You almost did it out of a while.
There you go. See? So
fourth, I think.
Yeah. So my point is at our level, ratings aren't the thing. Like at our level, the competition is getting so good that me being like, I'm 1050. And 50 rated because you've won three elite series and you've done all this stuff. I don't like that ratings takes away from the player and puts you down a level to where it's almost a negative thing. An example is Will Schusterick. Okay. This saddens me because Will Schusterick's rating is so low. And when I hear people talk about him, they talk about how low his rating is. If you get rid of the rating, there is no more negative talk about Will Schusterick, and it's only about his accolades and what he has done. He is one of the greatest players to ever play disc golf, but because of his rating, that takes away from that. It really does. And I think that is sad. I don't think it should be a thing at our level. It's like this. It's like watching Jim Furyk right now play, and let's say he gets into a tournament that he won when he was on the PGA Tour, right? He's playing in the Senior Tour now. When I watch Jim Furyk, I think great player. I watch him play. I know his accolades. I know he's a U.S. champion, and
most
I know he's great.
60 rounds of everyone.
59, 58. I know those things about him, and I go, dang, that guy is fire.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what if we put his handicap right next to him? It would dumb him down right there in that moment, and I would be focusing on a number that means absolutely nothing in the moment because he's playing on the PGA Tour at that moment, which means he's gas.
Mm-hmm.
I think ratings take away more than they give to the player.
I think they do that too at the top end as well, because we're kind of talking about the low end there a little bit. I think if you go out like tomorrow
if someone goes out and shoots 10 under par, right? And everyone else shoots 8, 7, 6, yeah, and that 10 under par is like 1050.
Yeah.
People are gonna be like, eh, it's an okay round.
Right. It takes away from the score, versus the number like, that you shoot.
Versus like, no, yeah, that person has a 2-shot lead, yeah, on everyone. Like that person played incredible.
Right, exactly.
Right. So it does dumb down even at the high end.
Well, that was my next point. If I go almost exact point, if I'm at a C tier, okay, I can't play C tiers, right? Apparently, because they are bad for your rating. So it's not smart to do them.
Mm.
I think that's one of the big reasons why a lot of people don't play smaller events is because of ratings. If I go to a C tier and there's a 955 guy, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there's no ratings and it's just his name that nobody's ever heard of. And I beat him by 2. It goes from people looking at the ratings and being like, well, he was 955. Paul must have played bad, or this guy, yes, played crazy good. They would go like, oh, who is this guy? You see what I mean? Mm-hmm. And they would see that I won. Or what if a 955 beats me? Or what if this guy beats me? Right? But there's no ratings. Now there's more interest in the actual person and the scores that you shoot, the number. We don't think of, like, if I shoot a course record, and this happened, I shot a course record, it was 10-12 rated, and somebody came up to me and they're like, hey, how'd you do today? I'm like, I shot the course record. And then he goes, what was it rated? And I said, it was the best anybody's ever shot on the course. The best anybody's ever shot at the course, you put a number, like you're saying, yep, of 10-12, you can automatically go be like, nah.
It's not that
like, I do that. Like I could do that with a putter.
Yeah.
And it's like, you see what I mean? Like it at our level, it takes away way more than it gives. Do I think there's a place for them? Yes, I do. But on the pro tour level, they need to go.
Just going back to your quick example there, I think that's more of a failure of the rating system than anything else. You're saying that like the course record was rated 10-12. That's just not how that should work with the rating system. But going back to the guy that's rated 950 that loses to you by 2 strokes, if I see that in a tournament and the rating system works the way it should, I will then go and see what your round averages were rated.
Yeah.
And if you averaged 960 and, you know, beat him by 2 strokes, I'll be like, wow, Yuli played horrible,
yeah,
this event.
The rating system is broken. Yeah.
But if, right, you average 1060 and he averaged 1050, I'd be like, that man played disgusting disc golf.
Right.
And that's, if the rating system worked the way it should, yeah, then it's a great reason to have it in that specific example, mm-hmm, just because then I can tell
yeah,
how well both the players played compared to the rating.
But it's just like this, because it's on the PDGA site, there's a place for everybody to go to see, right? Right? A level, like a C tier level event in golf would never be talked about and never be looked at, mm-hmm, ever.
It'd be really actually hard to find it.
Yeah, it'd be like a club championship almost.
It'd be very hard to
find.
It'd
be impossible. Yeah. Only the locals would know what was going on.
Yep.
And they would know that the best player is this person.
It's not going to be right on your, you know, no, main page.
But you're also not having a touring professional play.
You could. You could. Yeah.
Does that ever happen?
Yeah.
It's not super common, but I mean, there also are like bubble guys
that are,
they'll play in
Corn
smaller
Ferry
events.
Tour guys who like people know of who are
they'll play, especially off season, they'll play in some events like that, yeah, for sure. A couple points to kind of continue the conversation here and then we'll move on. I thought, you know, no disrespect to Manabu, you know, he came over here. He only can do what he can do, right? He's over in Japan, he's in, yeah, a very, yeah, isolated bubble. He dominates the scene over there, mm-hmm, and becomes the highest rated player in the world. He comes over to the United States. I think he plays 2 or 3 events. D-Glo, yeah, Worlds. Was that it? Just 2 events?
No, the Silver Series too.
Oh, he did. Yeah, so, okay. Yeah. So he did 3 events, mm-hmm, then goes back. Someone I think just said that he dropped 24 rating points with only 3 events.
Perfect example of throwing negative shade on the best player from Japan.
Yeah.
That should never be a thing. Yeah. We get the best player from Japan who comes over here and competes. There should be no negativity.
No.
We got the best player there to come to our country and play. And there's a lot of good players out there.
Mm-hmm.
You see what I mean? But because of the rating, he gets more of this negative thing.
But I think, and it's one of those things of where I think because of that, because we try to do this rating thing to make it make sense for everyone and across all boards, it doesn't work. So we were talking about on tour rating. And I think this is the way to fix it. your rating only exists for your on-tour events. If you go back and play a C tier, rating doesn't affect you. If you go back and play a B tier, doesn't affect you. Every time you're on tour, whatever you shoot there and your rating there, that actually matters. So now everyone that comes on tour, your rating is only from the people. Cause like basically if all we ever played were on tour events. So we all played in the same events. Our ratings would do a great job of showing who played better that season. Cause it's only based on the events that we're all in. So the problem is like when you go back and play two or three B tiers and shoot 1050, 1060 and boost your rating up 5 or 6 points and then come back on tour, that messes it up for all the other people that are on tour. So if you did just on tour, I think it'd be another statistic to look at. Like we look at the Disc Golf Pro Tour standings. It'd be another statistic to look at that actually would make sense.
I hear what you're saying, but why do we need a handicap system?
It's literally just like the standard.
I feel like at this point, I get that it's another thing you need to look at. You can put it there, sure. But I don't like how important they are. Like it should be just a stat. That's it.
Right. It should not be used by manufacturers.
Exactly.
They're important because we talk about them.
And we're trying to get rid of that.
It's all good.
We actually haven't talked about them in a very long time.
Yeah. But here's the thing.
That's a good point.
We need a better world ranking system that means something. It's actually pretty funny. You look at my UDisc ranking, I'm 33rd. You look at my standing on the Pro Tour, 34th. It's pretty accurate. Mm. That's something that you can compare and go out there and check for the most part. If you're on tour full time, tough to do without it.
Yep.
But I hate that it takes away from you and then I'm looking at a number. I'd rather learn more about Brody and what Brody's season's like and what he does.
I don't think it should be next to our name.
Yeah.
I think it should be like how UDisc is. Like I don't have my C1X putting stat right next to my name.
Yeah.
If you want to see how my C1X putting was, you have to go in and look my stats. That's what I think this should be. Is like go in and look.
But because ratings came so far a long time ago, it was the only way to compare.
Yeah.
And it was useful, very useful, and very important. Believe me, I have been obsessed with my rating in my career.
It still is very important for a lot of manufacturers and getting sponsored.
Oh, absolutely.
It might be the most important thing.
Yep.
Well, two things on that. The first thing I was going to say is I love the idea of adding an off-tour rating as well. I think that you should have an on-tour and an off-tour rating. And it's a great way for people to see like where they compare to players when they play off-tour. But on tour is such a different ball game that having that completely separate and just like when I'm playing on tour against these top players, that's when I have my on tour rating. When I get off tour, and you'll see a player like, no offense to him, you'll see a player like AB, he'll probably have a 1045 on tour rating. He'll probably have a 1060 off tour rating.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And then people will be like, oh, I'm not shooting, you know, the same rounds as AB. Yeah. He's actually 1060 when he's, you know, up against these, par 54 courses.
Yeah.
And then the other thing I would say is that one of my big issues with the rating is all these things we've talked about, plus it's how you sign up for tournaments.
I know.
It is so important to so many people.
Like, it is.
And it's getting more and more important. You have to be 1020 to sign up for tournaments these days. And when we're talking about something that can vary so much, we need to take away the credit from it.
Mm-hmm.
We need to be like, hey, if we don't think these things are accurate, if we don't think they're a great, you know, projection of how good you are, we need to stop giving them power.
Yeah.
We shouldn't not be able to sign up for a tournament because of the rating.
Oh, exactly. Like I'm 1021. Very, very easy that I could drop below 1020. And if I didn't have a tour car, I wouldn't be able to sign up for tournaments.
Yep.
That's kind of crazy to me.
Wild.
That's crazy.
The other last thing I'll say about ratings going to kind of like signing up for tournaments, I think it will also help the amateur competitive side, because the last thing you want to do is sign up into MA2 or MA3, and the winner of that division could have won MPO. And we see that a lot at amateur, like at smaller tournaments, is like someone in MA2 shoots 12 under and the winner of MPO is 6 under and they're playing the same layout. I think if they change the rating to where it only took us a percentage of your best scores, not an average, and then you drop your worst scores. Literally take a percentage of just your best scores. That would reduce these like sandbaggers. Yeah. That would reduce these guys that can shoot really, really well, but also can shoot terrible from being able to go in a smaller, a lower division.
Yeah.
Like if you can shoot well enough to beat MPO players, but it only happens once in a blue moon, you, that's the division you should be playing in. Cause there are majority of people that are playing in MA3 could never sniff winning an MPO event. Yeah. And so I think that takes away from the competitive level sometimes. As something I see,
I like that.
I see people complaining about that.
I think doing something like that would be nice because it would put an emphasis on high placing, which like obviously winning an event is the most important thing. Yeah. And average play isn't that important if you're not popping off. So I feel like that would help with that.
Yeah.
I think golf does that, what golf does 20%.
Yeah. It just makes a lot more sense to be like, hey, what is your potential? And that is where you should be going, not what your average is. Because there are some people that they're, you know, their worst and best rounds are like this. And then there's some people that their worst and best rounds are like this.
Just to give you like a counterpoint to what you're talking about. One of the issues I see with that actual mix is that you might have a player that plays at like an MA2 level for 95% of their rounds. And then every now and then we'll just pop off like an open level round. Mm-hmm. And if they have to play open in every single event, they won't cash at almost every event ever that they play the entire year.
But what you just said, they wouldn't be playing an MPO. If only 5% of their rounds were good.
Yeah.
The other 95% that you're going to take like the top 20 or 30%
of 20 to 30%.
Yeah. 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 You're not taking like their best 5% rounds.
I'm just saying that it does kind of punish that player that plays, you know, at a really low level rating for.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It should though. Cause what's important is like when you play well, it's how well you play when you play well.
Yes.
Right.
But you're just saying that like, I think it helps one player and it hurts another player doing the same thing.
It's doing the same thing across the board.
But like the super inconsistent player, that's you'd rather be that player. You'd rather be the AB who goes off and pops off a top two, top three finish. He also is consistent.
You're talking about the Pro Tour.
Yeah, I don't know the AMC.
If I'm talking about a C tier and I'm just going out for a weekend and I want to like make some money or like have a good time and something like that, and I don't cash at 80% of the tournaments I play.
But you're only cashing an MPO anyways. You're not cashing at the smaller divisions.
I get that, but you're cashing an MPO is similar to winning in MA1. They're somewhat comparable for a lot of players. I'm just saying that what you're doing is switching it, so now all the players that are consistent.
But how about I think that person should be penalized for the inconsistency, and not the person that is playing with someone that could potentially win MPO in their MA2. Like to me, I see that that's a bigger problem.
Okay. Just a bigger problem. I'm just saying that you're making a different problem.
It sucks now for that guy, but I think that's how it should be. Right? Like, I don't think you should.
It's always going to suck for somebody.
Yeah. Someone's always going to suck. Yeah. Well,
agreed.
Pause.
I just had to throw out the
counterpoint. Okay. This was a 1689 Nacho. How about this hot take? Women's ratings are overinflated compared to the men. A 950 woman could not compete against a 950 man on the same course. It really debunks the whole system. Anyone want to touch this topic?
I don't think that's true.
I think women's ratings are 30 points overinflated.
You think that a nine? What's Missy's rating?
965.
Okay, you think a 965 male would be able to would just absolutely crush Misty by 30%. I don't think that on a certain course. Maybe it depends on what his skill set level is and everything. But you get him on a
I'm just going based off of the ratings that we see when we play on the same layout.
Yeah,
the FPO ratings are drastically lower when they're in our
pool. We haven't played the same layout
for a while, but when they were in our pool, they were drastically lower.
I think the qualifs and competition variable is very important. Mm-hmm. I think
Fountain 982. Hills, sorry, 982 is Missy.
I think Fountain Hills is the perfect example. When you have tour level players go play Fountain Hills, it plays very easy for them. And then you have like amateur level pros, local pros play downhills. It plays very difficult.
Yes.
So I think you'd find kind of a similar thing with the FPO, MPO, or FPO, whatever field. So it would depend on the course. And then,
it depends on the field too. I totally agree. Yes. So when you're comparing like MPO tour ratings, I think that they, the women's ratings are overinflated compared to the tour level players on tour. This is because when you're playing on tour, almost exclusively you're playing against players that rated over 10-10.
See, but this...
And, you know, like, hear me out on this whole thing. Yeah. One of the things that leads to really good ratings is propagators on the bottom spectrum playing the difficult courses. Mm-hmm. So when you play, like, Worlds or Memorial or things like this, where you have a lot of players that are rated between 900 and 1,000 playing the same event as some of the top guys, you'll see the ratings are so much higher for the field. And I think that on the ladies spectrum, there's a wider spread of ratings in the tournaments. And because of that, it leads to higher ratings at the top. Example I have of this this is not calling anyone out or anything like that. River City Open, we played the exact same layout, the men and the women, except for the last hole was called a par 5 for the ladies and it was called a par 4 for the guys. So I just looked at the raw number for both because it's the exact same number and the ladies' ratings were 20 points higher, the exact same score than the guys. So for me, it's just that like propagator that like at the bottom end of the spectrum that is it is leading to the increase of the actual ratings. That's just what I've noticed myself.
There's a lot of courses like that though, where the same score. Like we've looked at this too when we talk about ratings sometimes of where if you
shoot, makes sense.
If you shoot like say a 10-20 rated round for MPO is a 60, and then a 10-20 rated round for FPO is a 58, and then we go through and we're like, okay, this hole they're playing a short tee pad, this hole smaller or closer basket, and you go through it and you're like, that course probably plays 7 strokes easier. But it rates, you see what I'm saying? Like that happens a lot. And we wouldn't really see a good idea unless we're playing the same course and we're all propagating each other.
Okay, so this is a perfect example of why I wish ratings weren't even a thing because of this
conversation.
It's failing of the rating system.
No, because of this right here. If we were talking about Missy, who's a U.S. champion, okay? And then this debate would be completely different because then we'd be like, would she be able to compete with an amateur advanced player?
No.
But they're the same, right? But that would be a completely different debate. We'd be talking about two individuals instead of a stupid number. You get what I'm saying? That number automatically goes into an argument right away instead of being like, well, yeah, but you get to the last hole. Missy's made a putt for $30,000. Like, she's pretty good under pressure. See, the debate goes completely different places.
But I don't think that's a good debate.
I'm just saying that
it's another negative connotation.
It takes away from the individual.
What I was saying is what you hear a lot of times is like when you have a female player come up in the scene and start doing really, really well, the initial question is how would she compete against the men? It happened with the Serena Williams, right? And they're like, oh, I bet Serena Williams. We were talking about Ronda Rousey the other day, where literally Joe Rogan, someone that is a pretty high-level mixed martial artist himself, said on his podcast that he thinks Ronda Rousey could beat men in the UFC. He's obviously has now come back and said that was incorrect. Yeah. But I think that's a normal question because you don't see it. Michelle Wee, same thing. How would she do on the PGA Tour? Mm-hmm. I think that is really the question. Is like, how would Kristen Tatar do if she played in the MPO field this week? Like, that should be more the question. Not can a random MA2 person beat Kristen Tatar? That seems like a little bit more disrespectful. Does that make sense? Like,
this kind of goes back to the on tour rating. It's like, if we had an on tour rating for all the ladies and all the guys, then it's not comparable.
Right.
It'd be like someone that's off tour that's rated 10-30 being like, oh, shoot, I'm probably for the 20th best player in the world.
Kind of cuts that off.
That does happen. Then they come on tour and then it's tough.
So going back to that, just having that on tour rating makes it this level ahead of, like, if you want to get this on tour rating, you have to tour. Yeah. You have to play these courses too. The, like you're saying, the course itself makes a big difference. One of the reasons an MA, you know, two rated player couldn't compete against you know, a lot of these ladies is because we're playing difficult courses. There's so many demanding shots that you don't see at your local events that so I don't know. Again, it's just a failing of the rating system.
I just wish we could talk about the person and what they've accomplished, not this thing that sits next to your name.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. It is kind of nice, though, just having a general gauge of, like, where do I stack up? And if the rating system was accurate, then it could be like, hey, Aaron's off-tour rating is 1030. My off-tour rating is 1,000. I'm like, okay, he probably averages 6 strokes better around than I do. And you could have a general gauge of where you're at.
Yeah.
All right. Let's go down a nice little rabbit hole that I had versus the PDGA this week. I took on Sully, is what he goes by. Sully 68783. I guess that's his PDGA number. My gosh.
Gotta love it.
I didn't realize that until I just looked at it right now.
He hates discussion.
I just kind of puked a little in my mouth. He is a PDGA. He is the PDGA Senior Policy and Compliance Officer. That is his position at the PDGA. What
happened?
Sorry, just a random piece of trivia since you're talking about Sully and PGA numbers.
Okay, yeah.
Big Germ's PDGA number backwards is Sully.
Wait, what's going on here?
I don't know.
Is it...
What's the why?
Why? What's why?
It's like a... It starts 3...
So you think a Y is a 3?
1, 1, 0, 5?
I would have to look it up. He told
Wait,
me.
Did you think of something in your head?
I think he pranked you.
Okay, we'll let Aaron. I don't know what Aaron was talking about there. We'll let him dive into that. Okay, so this is where it all started. We talked about the world's putting championship.
Yeah.
Okay. It was on a playground. Whatever. I posted the tweet. He comes out and responds. So as Dana Disc Golf pointed out, who I debated on debate night, maybe you should ask questions and do research first. Will I come on debate night? No, not until you commit to knowing what you're talking about before you speak. Otherwise, it's just explaining this thing I didn't bother to learn to me night. So then I respond with, will I come on debate night? No, this guy's coming in hot. I didn't invite him on debate night. He kind of just like...
It was
kind of like when you're not invited to someone's birthday party and you just like walk up to them in school and be like, I don't even want to go to your birthday.
Well, he was probably saying that was going to be your thing.
Yeah, he probably was thinking I was going to be like, hey, let's go on debate night. Fair point. So then he responded to someone else saying, you'd be surprised how difficult it is. Oh, wait, do you have the answer? Go ahead.
Yes.
Yeah.
Sorry. His PG number is 33705. So backwards, the 5 becomes an S. So you have S-O-L-E-E, Sully.
Oh, 3's an E.
Mm. Stretch.
Okay.
It's a stretch, but he told me that one time, and I thought it was kind of funny.
He told you that?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I think that's the middle name of his child.
Okay, so he responded to someone saying, you'd be surprised how difficult it is to find space for field events, especially because you can't clog up the courses for those who are practicing. I'm not sure what other areas of smugs were open for use. But sure, in an ideal world, it wouldn't involve playground equipment. And then I said, is this the same guy from the PDGA that told me you'd be surprised how difficult it is to rent out a driving range? Turns out, renting out a driving range is pretty easy and pretty cheap at $1,000. Nice. For those that don't remember... the PGA made it seem like renting out the driving range at Mulligan's, where we had World's Championship, which is impossible, couldn't do it. And really all it took was me walking into the clubhouse and saying, hey, if I gave you $1,000, can I have the driving range for the day? And they said, yes. That's how difficult it was. Then he said, I've spent a good part of my... this was someone else that responded. He said, I spent a good part of my professional career managing sports complexes and fields. It is absolutely not difficult to find space to host field events. That doesn't include a playground. I couldn't find another tweet. There was another tweet from someone in that area that does this as well and says there's like over 30 or 40 different places that you could have done this. And he also said, if reached out, we would have provided it for free. We would have given you a space to have the putting championship for free. Which I then responded, I guess the PDGA Sully guy should have done his research before he tweets. I'm just going back and forth. And then I did say, though, I will give it to Sully props because now in the future, when someone tells me, when someone comes at me for not winning, I'm just going to hit him with the, you have no idea how difficult it is to win on the Disc Golf Pro Tour. So I'm going to start using that in the future because I think that's a good one. He then also said, all I'm saying is that the PGA does not consider and has never considered that event to confer a world title. If people want to market it a different way to sell discs, that's up to them. So this is a weird stance that the PGA has taken. And I've talked to some other people, doubles and stuff, of where they now are just claiming that there was never a world championship doubles. There was never a world champion distance. There was never a world champ. This has never happened. I'm going to get to you in a second, Yulia. I just want to finish everything off. This guy tweets, it's advertised on his signature putter, five-time world champion. This guy tweets, I don't know, man, seems like it would be easy to understand why someone would be confused, seeing as how the winner is selling discs, declaring himself to be the putting world champion. This is Eagle McMahon, 2023 putting world champion rainmaker. This person then goes, Terry Miller is a world champion putter as well. I think he would be disappointed to hear there is no such thing. That was like the first thing I heard about Terry Miller.
That was
he was the world champion putter. He won the world championship putting. So then I hit him with the PGA is claiming there is no putting world championship and there never was one. Not sure why they are trying to change the narrative on this. Here is a source from the PGA on Jay Redding's Hall of Fame inductee profile. Asterisk, multiple world putting titles. Might want to get that changed before anyone sees this. So literally in their write-up of Jay Redding on the PDGA website, it literally states multiple world putting titles, which then Sully said, looked into this. There was a period when the PDGA recognized world championships for the field events. Maya Culpa. This hasn't been the case for about 10 years now. However, my comment about 2023 stands. I'm glad both Brody and I were able to learn something today. I don't know what I learned. So I don't know exactly what I learned. It does seem like Sully, who works for the PGA, learned something about the company he works for. But I'm just going to keep coming after the PGA because stuff like this pisses me off so much. Because there are so many people, and I've talked to other people that have won like the doubles world championships. And now they're just like, wait, now like I'm not considered.
I'm a two-time.
Yeah, go for it.
I'm a two-time.
Have the floor. Yeah. No, you're not. Apparently, because of Sully, well, you're not a world champion.
Well, when they did this, I talked to a few other world champions. And I'm like, what the heck are they doing? I pulled up posts that they had made on their website saying first world champions crowned today.
Yes.
On their website. Posting on their thing, being like, congratulations, you guys won. So they might not now, but they did then. Like, I feel like if it's not a world championship, you could just be like, they won the side event at the world championships. That's not what they did.
What is the reasoning? Does anyone know why they are super anti wanting to claim people, these world champion putters, world champion distance? What is the reasoning? Can anyone jump into the mind?
Ask Sully.
He clearly has no clue. You'd be a terrible person to ask. Do you guys have any clue?
Maybe they think it takes away from an individual world champion. You know, it's like, oh, trying to say that it's the same level as.
So don't have the events.
I don't know. I'm not.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No. I don't know. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, they definitely.
I do think you've got a nemesis, though. I think it's Sully. This guy. The whole PGA.
I do think
I like some of the people at the PGA, and they do some things great. Yeah. It's just there are other things where it's like, bro, we spend so much money, we give the PGA so much money, and then they just do so many stupid things. And we have to. Someone told me too, like, this was a wild take. I never understood this. They're like, you complain about the PGA a lot, but you don't know anyone that works there. Bro, I complain about everything. The majority of people in life complain about everything and have no idea who works.
Yeah.
I don't think you have to know who works somewhere to complain.
Yeah.
We pay, if you pay money, we all pay money to the PGA every year. Therefore, I think we should be able to like say, like, hey, we don't like this.
I think I think I was part of the problem with this is because I started complaining about the doubles world championship. And I'm like, why is this still a C tier? Why are they still getting $130? Mm. And I would do this every year. And then finally they're like, well, it's not really a world championship. And that got a lot of traction. I'm like, what are you talking about? So I don't know what it is, but they've treated it like a side event the whole entire time, which is awful the way that it's run. I mean, it's awful. It really is. Like, there's no debating it. Like, you're going to say it's a world championship, then not. But for the longest
Take
time.
It back. I don't get
the
it.
Longest time you had 60 people in your event and the winner got $130.
Yeah. Aaron, what's your take?
So I was just going to come up with a solution that might just help with this whole thing. I think the putting, I think the driving, the doubles, you could even do like a skill shot. You could do a, bring your own partner, whatever, like regular doubles rather than mixed as well. They just need to make a whole event that is completely separate from the world championships that they call like your skill event and have one weekend. We have all these things going on. It's the only thing happening. And then just everyone can come out. They can pick what they want to do. They can play them all. And then you can actually like give out a world putting title. You can make it an official event. You can do a lot of things about it. And overall, that would just like kind of help the whole situation. And I think people would love seeing it. I think it's a really interesting 100%. part of the sport that we don't get to see very often. I think that it'd be somewhat simple to do, especially when we've got a couple of these off weeks towards the end of the season. Yeah. I think everyone would like it.
Do they let anyone sign up for these things, or do you have to be in the tournament?
I think you have to be in the tournament.
Pretty sure you have to be in the tournament.
Yeah, because when you sign up for
the
tournament,
what's the name of the tournament?
All the world championships.
Okay, so you have to be in the world championships to be okay.
Yeah, but then when you sign up for the worlds, there's the side games that you can
add on.
Yeah.
See, I'm with you. I think if you do a separate event, anyone can sign up.
Bro, and then
Joe Schmo, that's a disgusting putter from Montana.
Yeah, you got Wiggins. Great,
flying.
Great example. Just someone that's disgusting at the distance. Sport. He is the best in the world. People all
let
the time
him come
sign,
in.
Let him come and get that title. I mean, it makes so much more sense to just have people
that's a great idea.
That are specified.
Yeah, you could have like 200 people that are just distance guys who are just like,
yes.
And well, that's all they do.
And you'd have people actually focusing on that event. Yeah. I think since it's a side thing to the event, nobody's focusing on that very like strategic. They'll focus on the actual event and then they go to the distance.
Oh, that'd be so sick. Because then even in the putting, you could have like this, you know, the doubles guy
who's
just at your local course and you're like, dude, Johnny is so filthy with the putt. And then he's at the place and maybe he takes out a couple big, there's so many stories.
I like this. I mean, let's just be real.
Let's run it, guys.
Eagle, like an Eagle versus Isaac, Eagle versus Gannon, Eagle versus Paul. Like these like putting champion, like if it came down to that, that would be kind of exciting to watch. You'll be even really exciting to watch Eagle versus someone I've never heard of.
Yep.
That isn't on tour.
And then he will be.
And it's just a disgusting putter.
Because he's just a putting guy now.
I think that's sick. Those
guys, yeah. Oh, for sure.
On a more like selfish note, they should also add an event of like a family doubles where you get to play with a family member.
Oh, that's gone too far. That's gone
so
too far.
Obvious.
No one cares about
obviously, like the Robinson brothers would just like smoke everyone.
And they wouldn't smoke us.
Yeah, but like you get some brothers. Playing in these
events. I have to get Judah playing solid.
Father son. I mean, there's a lot of fun teams there. I don't know.
All right, goat debate. Let's jump into it. I made the tweet, and I think a lot of people got confused by this tweet. So I kind of want to just quickly explain what I was talking about. The tweet was: if you think Paige Pierce is greater than Kristen Zatar, then you think Ken Climo is greater than Paul McBeth. The thought, this was more like a thought process or what do they call that? A thought exercise of where everyone, I think when you talk about the greatest of all time and you talk about these, you know, the GOAT status, right? I think everyone doesn't have the same idea. And we were talking about this a little bit earlier today of where if you're like, hey, who threw for the most yards in the NFL?
Yeah.
You just go to the stat, you sort, and whoever's at the highest, it's that person, right? But then if you're like, who is the best quarterback in the NFL? Then there's a debate because do you look at wins? Do you look at yards? Do you look at touchdowns?
Not a debate.
True. But do you look at interception? Like what do you factor in? There's a little bit more to have to factor in there, right? And my argument with, or my thought process with this, or thought exercise with this was, if you're saying Paige Pierce is better than Kristen Tatar because she has more world titles, then you have to say that King Climo is better than Paul McBeth because King Climo has more world titles. Now, I know you can now extend it and be like, well, Paul almost has the same amount of majors and all this stuff. I was just simply going off of a very basic world title thing. If that's what you're saying, who has the most world titles, that is the best. And then someone actually made a good point. I think Juliana Korver has to be in the picture because I believe she also has five world titles for FPO. So that was just more of a thought process. And it was very interesting to kind of see what people think about what they view as the greatest of all time and why. We're not going to discuss who we think the greatest of all time is in MPO or in FPO, but what do you guys think? What accolades, skill level, like what is it that you value the most when you're talking about the greatest of all time in a sport and specifically in disc golf?
I'll go. I think the first thing is obviously major championships, world titles. I look at that. And then I look at how long were they that good for? How long were they that good for? How long did their span of being the best player last? And so I know we're not going to talk about it, but when I give Ken Climo the nod, because I do, I think about him winning a world championship at 40 years old or whatever it was. I think he was 40 years old. He won in 2006. And I always have said this. I said, okay, if McBeth can win at 40, I'll give him the nod. Because I think that is an incredible statistic that it went from 1989 or 1990 to 2006.
16 years. 17 years.
It's a long time. It's a long time.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that the like length of the reign is so important, especially in this actual debate that you're talking about right here. I think that's the number one thing, is that we haven't quite gotten through the full careers of either of those players.
Yep.
So you can't really make the judgment of who is going to be the GOAT until they both retire, until they both stop playing. So at the moment, we're just talking about who is better and comparing their careers as a whole. And the one thing I would like to add to what you're saying is, first of all, elite series are almost as hard. They're like maybe even harder to win than majors as well. So I know that people put majors in a category above everything else, and people do that in golf. They do it in disc golf. Elite series to me are like at least like only a tiny bit below that on this level of how good are you, just because they are so hard to win.
Can I ask a question about that?
Yeah.
Do you think that will change as more and more pressure gets added to majors? Because I think before you really had like the world championships and like everything else didn't really matter. But now as like Champions Cup, now as these other majors are, I mean, I guess USGC also matter too. But now that the more emphasis is being put on the majors more than ever before, do you think like the pressure added to those majors, even though the fields are going to be roughly about the same, do you think that added pressure gives them the nod a little bit as being more meaningful?
Maybe so. And the extra round, I think, also makes it a little more meaningful. It's hard for me to say specifically. I only have my own experience, and I felt like I played better at Portland Open than I did at the World Championships. Mm. So, I mean, it's kind of a weird thing there. And one was an elite and one was the World Championships, which is the best major, apparently. And it's just kind of like a weird, like, who decides this? We're still playing the same players. We still have to beat the same competition.
Culture. Culture.
There is culture. And I guess you're saying that basically it's the added pressure. If we say they matter more, then it's a little bit more added pressure.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. Hard to say for sure.
Well, I think the added pressure helps the best playoffs, though, too. Right. So I think it's easier for the best players to win at a major when the pressure is the highest.
I don't think that.
Second point, you kind of touched on it a little bit with the extra round. I think it's also easier to win a tournament with five rounds versus three rounds if you are the best player. Right. So Calvin would love to have 10 rounds.
Yeah.
And for a lot of, maybe all of Kenny's championships, he had 10 rounds, right?
No.
Well, a lot of them, they were more than.
They're like seven.
Seven rounds.
Yeah, I think seven.
It makes it a lot easier when you're the best player to win when you have that many rounds. It really weeds out the competition. So I think that maybe takes away from Kenny a little bit.
Less likely for like a Cinderella story to just like,
yeah, exactly. If you had
number one in the world right now,
right.
If you just take, played,
if you had 150 round tournament,
150 round Calvin won. That's what our whole season.
If you had one round tournament, it'd be like anybody's game. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that does make
Calvin just won the season.
Yeah.
Like it's winning the season.
Yeah.
I think the level of competition, it should probably be factored into the GOAT, you know, decision as well. It's just maybe hard to say, but
I want to talk about you saying that it's easier for the best players to win majors than other players. I don't think that's true at all. I've always thought that majors, the best players fell apart more than anybody. As far as, I felt like it was easier to play up in the competition than other people because they kind of fell apart.
Maybe other people always feel the pressure. So in majors, it's the only time that the top players feel the pressure.
Exactly.
I don't know.
Yeah. Ooh. No, that's my point. Yeah.
Wow.
You know what I mean? Like that's the only one that means something to them.
I suppose. Is that the way? Can you look at stats on that? Like, I mean, Paul hasn't had any trouble in majors.
What about Calvin?
Tell you on it. That Calvin's a good example.
What about Calvin? Number one player.
That is a good example.
What about Simon?
Isaac and Gannon haven't had issue. Ricky's won a couple.
Yeah, but Ricky hasn't won in a long time, and he's been the best player.
That is really true.
Yeah.
It's really, yeah.
Back to the GOAT conversation. The last thing I want to add to that is we talked about this briefly. One of the things you can add into the whole GOAT discussion is how dominant the player is. So, for instance, if you are beating the entire field by a drastic measure for the same period of time as someone who's just like scraping by wins, you would give the edge to that player. So, just like in comparison, like Paul had the one season where he averaged like 1.7th place for the whole season, won 5 majors.
Yeah.
That's a season of just obliterating the field. Like he's playing so well.
It's also compared to who you run into as well.
Yeah.
Like Paul had to go against Ricky for a very long time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Kenny had to go against Barry and Feldberg. Who won all kinds of...
It's also hard to know how good the competition was when you have a player like Kenny coming in and dominate so much. He can almost make the competition look worse than it maybe was.
Yeah.
Mm. All right. Disc Golf Pro Tour.
I played against Kenny. You guys didn't. He was a monster.
I don't want to play against him.
He was an absolute monster.
We're going to.
I played against Joe Revere.
Yeah, he did.
And speaking of which, we named some of these. The Disc Golf Pro Tour has announced that a 9-hole skins match will take place after round 2 of the USDGC featuring Ken Climo, Barry Schultz, and Will Schustrick. This round will be available to spectate for all USDGC pass holders and will become available on Disc Golf Network on September 10th. Now I usually don't really care to like.
I'm watching that.
I'm
watching that.
I'm showing up to that.
I will be there.
I'm showing up to that. I am showing up to that 100%. I think that's going to be much watched television, and I'm also excited too because if you remember when we had Kenny on, he did say I told him I would hold him to it. He said he'd do a practice round with us at USCGC.
Yep.
So. That's going to be awesome as well. But yeah, I'm 100% there. And if you are, did I say September? Sorry, October 10th. October 10th is what I meant. If you are going to be at USCGC, that's a must watch. You got to get there. All right, a few listeners' questions, and then we're going to wrap it up here. This is from Glenn. How do you deal with the haters who are really just people who haven't caught up to the fact that disc golf wants to get more professional and all the hard questions of other sports were asked and discussed decades ago? Do you guys get much like kind of negative stuff on social?
Sometimes.
Goose, Ez?
Ezra told me about the first hater I've ever had in my entire life.
Oh, here we go.
It was just a comment on one of our videos that said, I'm not a big fan of Goose.
How'd you do
I commented that.
I couldn't sleep that night.
As any haters? Any?
I mean, you get a few negative comments. You get a few negative comments here on there, but I don't think. I don't know. I probably have haters, but they aren't as vocal as they should be.
It's not as personal. You don't get too much personal stuff.
No.
Yules?
Yeah. There's all kinds of haters everywhere.
I'm sorry.
How do you handle it?
My dad told me a long time ago, the best revenge is success.
Ooh.
Like that.
That's
a good one.
Yep. Like that. I live by that. That's
wow.
Yep. You don't have to worry about it.
The thing with me is like the majority of the stuff I get, I actually love. Like I love like getting into it with people. Obviously, if you follow my Twitter, And so it doesn't actually really bother me. I actually like enjoy the back and forth. I don't enjoy like, I don't care, but I also like, it doesn't really lead to any discussion. If you just like say like, oh, you suck at disc golf. It's like, okay, we can't really go anywhere from there. That's your opinion. Great. Whatever. Yeah. But we can't go anywhere there. Versus like, if you're like, hey, I think you're stupid and I think this is why, now we can go somewhere because yeah. you're giving me a point. And then there's a few things that to me, I think should be off limits. And when people yeah. go there, that is, that's the stuff that it's not when it's at me, it's yeah. it's close to people to me. That's when sure. I actually get kind of really annoyed. But other than that, like, I don't mind people coming at me. Yeah. You can come at me as much as you want.
Just a note for everyone. If you do want to be a hater of Brody, you are opening yourself to just relentless tweets coming back at you, as he has shown well, tonight.
The thing is you have to, if you're willing to put stuff out there and you know, critique people and critique trophies and all that, you have to be willing for yeah. people to do the same thing yeah. back towards you.
Yeah.
And I'm open to like, there's sometimes where people will say something. I'm like, oh, that makes a lot of sense.
You have to have thick skin in what we do.
Yeah.
Period. Doesn't matter what it is. If you're doing social media, if you're a competitor, an athlete, you have to have thick skin because somebody's not going to like you. You know what I mean? And really what it comes down to in life, not to get too deep, but the only thing that matters is what you think of yourself. That's it. Because you know you. And so
it's a great point.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think too, I think people sometimes, cause there's some people saying like drama. I think some people are missing to me. Drama is more like talking about like what people are doing, like off tour.
Yeah.
Like what relationships they're doing, what they're, you know, what they're doing behind closed doors. Like that stuff to me is like talking about drama. I don't really care about that crap. Like if you're doing weird stuff off tour, whatever.
Yeah.
I like to just talk about what's going on in like actual disc golf, like yeah. stuff that's happening in disc golf.
Our podcast would be 8 hours if we talked about what was going on off the course.
Would it though? I don't really know that. Maybe you. Maybe
you want to know what's off tour.
maybe that's
stick to disc golf.
Maybe you guys should start. We're tour life. Maybe you guys should be like off tour.
I don't want to know.
You guys. Dig into all the stuff that goes on off tour.
I have to quit my job.
All right, last one here. We've got from Jared. Who's the better basketball player, Brody or Yuli? Also, who would win in the video game version? Since you guys are here with us, we'll have everyone in here. Who's claiming the best basketball?
We have to go one-on-one? That wouldn't even be fair.
See, I think we're a monster. I think it has to be like a skills challenge.
Brody's a monster at a lot of sports. Yuli's a monster at a lot of sports. I think basketball 100% goes to Brody.
I think it has to be like a skills challenge, though.
I've never seen Brody play basketball. I know Yuli's solid, and I also know that Brody has glass knees. So I might say Yuli.
Oh, yeah.
With that tip, he might be able to beat Brody.
I always do you when people say those type of questions, do you always take it as like right now? Like if we just suit it up right now yes. or that's how everyone views it.
If you have 5 years also like prepare. Yeah.
Oh, I mean,
or in your prime, who would have won?
Yes. That's more what I mean. It's like, what if you're 40 years old and someone asks you like, hey, could you beat this person in disc golf? Are you thinking like, well, can. Yeah, could
or can? That's well, could then I would say yeah when I was my peak.
This question right here was asking who right could win right today. Give you guys a basketball one on one.
Man, I hope my shot is good.
I don't know.
No offense, you don't need a shot. You're a massive human being.
If it was one on one, I can't.
You can't do anything.
Yeah.
We'll see. Video games. What about video games?
I'm not very good at video games at all.
I think Gooseman might be the best video game.
I'm good at a few video games. It depends
list
on
them. List them off. The people want to know what video games do you? What video games do you rock?
I played League of Legends for a long time, so I'm pretty good at that one.
I play Fortnite 3 times a week when I'm home, at least.
Ooh, you might get me in.
I'm
Fortnite.
Awful. No, I am awful. I enjoy it though. I do it more for to like talk to my friends.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's like one of my favorite games because I can sit there, we talk trash, and we can catch up. Oh, that's what I play.
At Risk, I think Brody's got the edge.
I didn't specify what kind of video games, though.
Master, currently master at risk.
Master,
a few games away from Grandmaster. It's coming. It's close.
That's gonna be a big day.
Master, yeah, yeah. If people stop suiciding into me, it'd be a lot easier to get to Grandmaster.
Is that a video game?
Risk,
or is it a board game?
That's a board game, not a video game. Video game would be like Fortnite, Call of Duty, Madden, something like that.
But it is a video version of the board game. Still a board game?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Is a crossword a video game? If it's on your phone?
If a video game of chess, is it still chess?
Come on. I got the Golden Monday crossword this week.
These are all very good points. Any other topics you guys? Oh, I guess, how are you guys feeling going MVP? I said I was going to talk about that a little bit. How are you guys feeling with your season and going in?
Is that what you guys are going to say?
I hope so. It's always a gamble.
So we never really touched on this, but like one of my big issues with MVP is the T-pads. And especially today, when it was raining and really slick, one of my least favorite things is trying to throw gap shots on super slick T-pads. Because I just don't know when I'm going to slip, where the disc's going to come out, and it's so tough at MVP. So today, really tough, but I have hope that tomorrow will be better weather, and they've talked a lot about what they're going to do to keep the tee pads dry and stuff like that.
Blow torches.
So apparently that's a new thing, and it worked
blow
great.
Torch?
It worked great on the tee pad I saw. Holy cow, the thing was dry.
Of course. Yeah, it's a blow torch. Yeah. That's great. That's so awesome.
If that's the case, I've got a lot of confidence. I think I've got the shots I need out here.
All of a sudden, it's just burnt to the ground. No.
It goes completely awry.
So good, no trees.
I'm trying to get rid of the Christmas trees. Just blow torches.
Oh my gosh.
Are we going to see the grunt come out this week?
Oh, I was trying out the grunt today. Just a little intimidation factor. I think it was helping, but I don't think that I have the self-confidence to pull it off.
Yeah.
Maybe just try it on like hole one and just see the reaction from the crowd. Just go off of that.
When I say grunts, I mean screaming as loud as I can, too. So,
Ez, how you feeling?
I feel good. Except, aside from these last couple days, I put a ton of work in practicing this last like week and a half since Worlds. Mm. So I'm hoping that pays off. Mm. I don't know.
See what happens.
Yeah.
Yules?
I threw my first disc in a long time, like yesterday. Nice. Well, I had my bachelor party this weekend, so I forgot about disc golf, and we all went and we had a good time. No, I still feel good. I did get two practice rounds in, one yesterday, one today, and it felt solid. A couple under, like hovering right around even, is pretty good for me. Because during the tournament, if I can shave a couple off, you know, make a couple more putts. This course is just like, you got to be on. And it's a four round, it's like one of those grindy tournaments to where you could practice all you want, and then all of a sudden, nine holes in, you're five over par.
And you just got to grind it out.
Yeah. One of the really nice things about this course, like you were saying, though, is it is hard. It's one of the harder courses we play on tour. So if you get out there, you get your six birdies and you say par on everything else.
Oh my God.
You're shredding.
Yeah. Very
and
good. That's
so nice. And if you're out of it just a little bit, you can pop off 10 down one day and you're right back in contention. Yep. Yep. One of my favorite things is playing tough courses where that is possible.
Me too.
Yeah, it seems like the score probably, if we do get good weather, right, is probably going to be hovering around like the mid 20s is probably what I put it. Like in the 22 to like 27 range, I think is probably what's going to
work. Really?
It's four rounds.
I think he's low.
Yeah.
I think it'll be over that.
Six to seven under a round. You don't think so?
I think you're 30. 30 down.
30. I think it's going to be windy. Did you guys look? I think it's going to be windy a couple of days.
No, not the Hawking, though.
I'll put the line at 6 under, 23 on.
You're going 23?
Literally what I just said.
Yeah, I know. I had to think about it.
Oh,
yeah.
I was going to say, wait, you're saying 30.
Bro, you're right, though. You're right. 30.
Thursday's going to be 10 to 15.
In the wind?
Friday's going to be 10 to 15. Saturday's going to be rainy, 15 to 25 wind.
Yeah.
And then 10 to 15 on Sunday.
12 under winner.
So it's gonna be windy. It's gonna be windy all four days, and then Saturday is gonna be super, super windy.
How do you feel?
Not good. Not good. I'm definitely excited for the season to end, unfortunately. Like this year just feels like I need to like have a full reset.
Yeah.
I don't know what happened this season. Definitely did not go the way I wanted to.
It's a long season, man.
Yeah, and I kept thinking the next tournament was going to be my tournament, and it never was. It never was. So it's unfortunate, but you know, it is what it is, and we'll come back next year and try it all over again. Silas, did we miss anything? I got my speakers turned on, so we'll hear you. I think we got everyone Gucci? Everyone?
Yeah.
So everyone fine? All right, sweet. All right, well, that's going to be it for this week, Tour Life. Thank you guys so much for tuning in. We appreciate all the support, and thank you, and we will see you guys next week.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.